Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yes, greetings from Florida. Dan Temple here up in the upper, I'd say, northwest side or corner of Florida. And it's beautiful. We got spring. The daylight's coming earlier. I got the birdies out the window, which is really kind of cool. So I'm sort of debating whether to leave the window open, see if you can hear the birdies. Of course, the problem is you might hear the garbage trucks too. So I haven't quite decided how to handle that particular issue yet, as everything here is always in flux all the time. Yesterday we did a marathon broadcast. I don't think I'll ever do it again. I'm glad I did it, but I don't think I'll do it again, at least not for a while, like maybe a year or two. We had Jonathan, we had Pianchi, one of our regular callers, and we had Derek joined us for a little bit, our financial reporter, who'll be with us in an hour and a half. And we went over the entire case, Judge Mizell, on the mask mandate. And what was interesting in overturning the mask mandate, I found it a fascinating case. I really wanted to spend, if I could, the whole show. I just had no idea it would be that exhausting. By the end of it, we were kind of tired. And I don't know if I haven't listened to it yet. So I don't know if we sounded like we were that tired, but I'm going to find out. But it was exhausting. And what was fascinating, though, but we covered such an amazing amount of ground. We covered the administrative procedures. We covered Title 42. You know, when they say they're going to abolish Title 42, they're only going to take a little tiny part of it that covers the borders, because Title 42 is the entire public health title of all U.S. laws. And the problem is that none of it is in the Constitution. There's no delegation of authority over public health in the Constitution to the federal government. And so the entirety of Title 42 should be done away with, because it's unconstitutional, as should the title that governs education, energy, environment, all those things that have no business in the federal government, the FBI, national police forces, you know, who knows what. I think the CIA actually is covered. I think we can look to preserving the nation in terms of the world and things like that. And the border is certainly covered. Defending the border against invasion, not causing the invasion, so that's the kind of thing. Anyway, so, but being able to go over those things of how a case should work, how the judiciary should work, how a decision should be arrived at by considering all the arguments and then actually making a decision as to the best one, how decisions should be limited to the case. The case of the mask mandate, that's the case. That's it. So the judge did not go on to prescribe that no mandate should ever be issued, that no policies like this should ever be done. That's up to Congress, And so the limits, the proper limits of the review, and I hate the term judicial review, because it usually means making up something in the Constitution that isn't there and imposing a policy. And of course, that's blatantly unconstitutional. That's why that was left out of the Constitution. But in terms of a check and balance on the rest of government, that's exactly what the federal judiciary is supposed to do. And so this might be something interesting for Jim Dykes to take up. And maybe we'll give a chance to listen to the whole show. Maybe we'll do it next week. But the whole idea of how much the government can control, I mean, they blew everything. Public comment. They didn't follow any of the rules of the Procedures Act, which is the Administrative Procedures Act is the way that the administration has to go. Those are the procedures for doing things like regulations, which includes public comment, which, and they just, we don't need it. It's impractical. It's in the way. It's, or giving authority to the CDC that they don't have, like things like, and other things that were overturned by the courts were the moratorium on evictions. The CDC is not the real estate board. Okay. The other one was shutting down the cruise ship industry, and the CDC is not the travel board. That's not their job. The only thing the CDC can do that I know for sure is that they can stop someone from coming into the country if they have a disease, and that means symptoms. Okay, so when someone is known or proven or shown to have a communicable disease, you can stop them at the border. That's what the border's for. They can also, it looks like they have the authority under Title 42, and this is by the Surgeon General, not the CDC, but the Surgeon General, to stop people from moving state to state if they have, but people, animals, things, molds, fungus, parasites, all those nasty things that create damage, especially to agriculture. CDC, I think they can stop people, especially from going state to state if they have an obviously communicable disease. But you can't quarantine the healthy And the Department of Agriculture is supposed to handle things within the country regarding, you know, agricultural pests, molds, fungus, parasites, worms, all those kind of stuff. So the CDC is taking a lot of authority they don't have. But it was a fascinating discussion, and I basically summed up 3 hours yesterday in about 5 minutes today, which is probably the best way to do it. Show today, we've got Twitter deals, Earth Day propaganda, and needless inflation. And so propaganda and needless inflation with Derek, and if we don't, I'll cover it in the last little bit. Schedule today, Fridays are crazy. We've got Shirley Watchwell at 6:30, so the bottom of this hour. Jim Dykes at 7 o'clock, top of the next hour. Derek Park at 7:30, bottom of the next hour. And Donnie Chapman at the top of the third hour to talk gun tech and competitions. And then we'll have whatever time he doesn't need, you know, to go over the stuff we didn't cover in the first half hour, which is mine. So let's get to start with the whole idea of Earth Day. Earth Day doesn't seem to get all the celebration and notoriety that it used to. I mean, I remember the first one, 1970. I was a kid, but I remember it. You know, apparently my friend Gregory Wrightstone remembers it also. And so Gregory's been on the show, and it's kind of fun to have a Greg and a Gregory. It gets very confusing on the show here. But he has an organization he started called the CO2 Coalition. That's carbon dioxide, folks. Carbon dioxide is a good thing. Of course, his website is all green. It's really, why? Because carbon dioxide creates green. That's what it does. It's plant food. And not only are the plants dependent on it, we are too, because we are dependent on the plants. And so let me just read what he wrote. He wrote an article that initially appeared in the Washington Examiner, but some of these other ones require, you know, subscriptions, and I can't do 50 subscriptions, so I find alternate publications for a lot of stuff. And he wrote this 4/21, so that would have been yesterday, 4/21/22. Gregory Wrightstone, Cancel Earth Day, Celebrate Earth. He says, as a 14-year-old student in South Central Pennsylvania at the time of the first Earth Day in April 1970, I recognized the need for a real cleanup of what was a horribly abused environment. When I went out to study geology in college, I embraced the environmental movement as my own. In my early years at university, I subscribed to Mother Jones and the Militant. I think I did. What about the Militant? But I certainly didn't subscribe to Mother Jones. Mother Jones is one of the most radical leftist publications out there. But at the time, it seemed pretty normal. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strike Force energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, right your laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at strikeforceenergy.com. That's strikeforceenergy.com.
Start your engines.
When one is faced with a crisis, you find your true character. How you react to such an emergency can determine the rest of your life. Two paths present themselves for you to choose. One leads to tragedy. The other leads to becoming a new person. Shirley Wattrall, a survivor of a dangerously abusive relationship, is that new person. She is the author of Heels to Holster. She is a firearms instructor, motivational speaker, women's empowerment advocate, and a reporter for Action Radio. So now, here is the DC Project, Women and Guns, with Shirley Wattrall.
Good morning. Hello. Hello.
This is Greg Penglis, creator of Action Radio, for my town, Milton, Florida. Milton, it's where I live. It's where you can live, too. It's where you can bring a new business, especially a business that helps our downtown historic district. We have everything in Milton. We have the Blackwater River. We have the Imogene Theater, built in 1912 and still booking national acts. We have Scoop's Ice Cream. We have Boomerang's Restaurant, where I get my favorite Thai chicken pizza. We have an outdoor stage for music acts and free concerts by the river. The Blackwater Bistro will keep you in steak and seafood indefinitely. We have brew pubs creating great craft beers and giving us all a place to relax and talk. But it's more than just stuff and food and buildings. It's people. Remember the show Cheers, where everybody knows your name? It's that kind of place. So if you're tired of the cities, of the traffic, the frenetic pace of life that doesn't seem to get you anywhere, if you want a small city that has incredible potential, that combines the best of historic buildings and modern, fun, small retail shops and restaurants, and a great waterfront, plus who knows what for the future, take a look at historic Milton, Florida, in the Panhandle, near Pensacola, and the world's greatest beaches on the Emerald Coast of the Gulf of Mexico. Milton is going through a renaissance. Maybe you can be part of making it happen.
Okay, let's try this again. I'm calling into my show on my phone here. The address is on the phone. Shirley, are you there?
No,
hello,
I'm
Shirley.
Here. I can hear you.
Okay,
can
so
you hear me?
Yeah, yeah, I can hear you fine. Did you get my first half hour or no?
No, I usually get in a little early as soon as I'm available, and I go on Facebook and try to hear it, and nothing would come up. But that was like in
wow.
The last 10 minutes I tried.
Yeah, so that's why I'm wondering if I lost my first half hour. At least I didn't lose it yesterday. Yesterday we had a huge 3-hour production. Yeah, I heard a little glitch. It just, the sound went off for a second, and there's no way for me to know. I've been trying to get Blog Talk to do something where we have meters, you know, a little digital meter, so I know when I'm on the air and when I'm not. And you get one little glitch. It just went off for a second, and the sound came back. I guess I was off the air at that point because I went through a whole article with Doug McGregor and Ukraine and things like that. I hate losing part of the show because, you know, you can't get it back. You never say things the same way. And I'll see if it made it onto the podcast. But as it stands right now, that I don't know when it went out. So probably there's probably about 20 minutes of silence in there. People are going to go, what happened? All right. So now I'm on the phone.
Well, yeah, either that or it could have been on my end, but yeah, I tried like 20 after and I went, I wonder what's wrong with, so I tried a couple times and then I thought, well, I'll just call in and I could hear the commercial, but I didn't hear you talking.
Yeah. Okay. So that's probably, yeah, it'll shut me out. You heard, okay, you heard your theme. That's good. Yeah. It'll shut me out. It'll just shut me out of the show. And so I don't know what happens, but that's just the way it works. Yeah. So now I'll just do the rest of the show on the cell phone, which is fine. It's not as good as sound quality for me. You know, I like having a microphone. That's the whole point of, you know, being in radio with my headset. So I feel like I'm actually on radio, but yeah. All right. Enough of that. What's now that at least we're working again, because this is a busy, Fridays are busy. So the fact that something is shut down Friday just bugs the hell out of me. All right. So what's going on in DC Project, Gun World, Girl Gun World? Is that a term, Girl Gun World? That's hard to say, by the way.
That would be Girl Gun World. Okay, well, I'm going to start with, because I want to make sure I get it in this time, is I want to talk about the DC Projects. One of our major fundraisers is our team match in June 18th and 19th, and it's in Missouri, Iberia, Missouri, at Gadsden Shooting Center, and it's a two-person team match with eight stages, and it's a Lewis cash payout. So what happens is the top three teams in each quarter of the finish get some money. So we're looking for anyone that wants to register. They can go to dcproject.info to register, or if someone wants to be a sponsor, we have sponsorships available. And we have a banquet going on the 17th, the night before the match starts. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I did participate first year or two. When it was in Texas, it's a lot of fun. A team match, that's the first time I did a team match, and it's just a lot of fun. That's what I have in mind. That's our emphasis, women and juniors. And they actually get an extra payout as well. If you have a two-person woman team or a woman and a junior. So a lot of fun. A lot of good stuff there if anyone's interested.
Yeah, do the teams have to be all women, or is it different rules, or how do you divide it all up?
No, they don't have to be. It can be a man-woman team, man-junior-woman. There's different classifications. You can mix them up. No, you don't just have to be. But since emphasis is on women, so the two-person woman teams and the women junior team or junior team gets a little extra bonus. Prize.
Ooh,
but no,
that's
yeah. So I just wanted to make sure I got that out there. And let's see. Well, my big thing was I got published in the Concealed Carry magazine. Woo.
Yes, I saw that. Let me get my round of applause here. Make sure. So now I'll see if my buttons are working. Yep, they're working. So tell me about
that was pretty exciting to see. It's one thing, you know, I wrote the book Heels to Holster, but it's another thing to have a magazine actually publish an article that in which I talk about domestic violence and a little bit about my situation that I survived, and then what happened afterwards and what helped me get my life back. And basically that was being able to go to a range and practice my Second Amendment rights and take a firearms class. So that was pretty exciting to see that, I must say. Another milestone in my life. And,
oh, congratulations.
You know,
I think this is cool. Yeah, what you're doing is just amazing, and it is definitely inspiration. How did that transition work? You know, obviously this is in the book in much more detail, but I'm just curious, like the time, like when did from when you ended your horrible situation to when you went to the shooting range, did someone suggested to you? Did you come about this on your own? How did you get from where you were, you know, onto the range and into guns and now teaching firearms to women and things like that?
Well, it started when my ex-husband purchased a 22 Ruger Mark II 22. Yes, that's what it was. So I actually still have it. And you know, that didn't work out too well. The one time we went out shooting, and it didn't work out well at all. I didn't know what I was doing, and he wasn't patient, so that didn't work out. So then he had nothing to do with the whole domestic violence. It was someone else after I got the divorce and was dating this other person. And then after the whole situation, I always had that gun, you know, sitting there in the bed stand, and I'm like, I don't even – this is when, you know, I didn't know anything. Does it still – operate? Is it rusty? I don't know. It's been sitting there for years and years and years. And I thought, you know, I need to figure out, you know, how to use a firearm. So then I signed up for a class, and of course, none of my friends were that interested. They weren't interested in firearms, and I thought, I just want to be able to make sure it works and be able to defend myself if I need to, you know, in the home. And that's when I signed up for that class, and it was a, it took me a lot of courage, because first thing, it was way, it was like a 45-minute drive for me, and it was way out there, and I'm like, I get there, and of course, most of the class, this was a concealed carry class, and, that wasn't concealed carry class. You could get it, but at that time, I wasn't interested in it. I didn't really figure I'd be carrying. But I was, I had a few things going against me. One, I was there alone. I figured I didn't know anybody. A majority of the class was made up of men.
Mm-hmm.
I was left-handed. I did not take a firearm.
Well, that's interesting. You never said that before. I'm just kind of curious. Yeah, left. Are you cross dominant or are you left eye dominant?
Cross eye dominant.
So that's even more of a challenge. So we should explain that too.
Yeah, well, the first challenge was because I was going to rent a gun because I didn't know anything about mine. And, of course, they just had these universal, if you're left-handed, they had universal holsters, which weren't all that great. You know, the gun wouldn't come out of it very well. And so I was fighting with that the whole day. But, left-handed, right-eye dominant, it really started shooting long gun, like shotgun and rifle. That's when I went, they said, you've got one of two options. You can learn to shoot it right-handed or you close your left eye when you shoot. And I said, well, I'm just going to learn to shoot right-handed. So I shoot long gun right-handed and pistol left-handed.
That's interesting. They didn't give you the option to shoot both eyes open.
Well, you can now, you can retrain yourself. For me, I'm just going to do what feels natural for whatever reason. That's what I'm left eye dominant. So I'll just, you know, right-handed instead of worried about how to shoot left-handed and get my, I can't even figure this out, right eye over there or whatever. Yeah, that's like, I mean, I see people try that too, and I'm like, yeah, that's not going to work. when I first started, I was very intimidated by the whole thing. And the funny part was we had, I don't know how many people, we had 12 or so, and they eventually, because there's such a, there might have been more than that, they wanted to break up into two groups. Well, I went, when we lined up at the range, I went way on the end. You know, there was just, I think, three or four women. I went way on the end, and then when they broke it up, we fired a few rounds, and then they cut us off like six or eight people in, and they took us in the back. And I went in the back with all these guys, and I went, I don't know why I'm back here. And at the end of class, they said, well, they were looking at everybody's target, and they were trying to figure out who had more experience and who could, you know, was doing a really good job. And I fit in with the experienced shooters, the guys that were experienced. And I was like, okay. And I didn't know that at the time, and they didn't realize that was really my first time in taking a class, because the first half of the day was in the classroom. So we did a lot of, you know, we talked a lot, got the fundamentals down, dry firing before we went out on the range. But yeah, that made me chuckle, because I went, no, this is my first time. And they went, oh. But I kept up with them, so that was a good thing. It was also funny.
Oh, go ahead, yeah.
Huh? Go ahead. They were taking it to the next level, you know. They went, all the guys had experience, so they went, okay, you guys want to, you know, try this drill, or it was more advanced drill. And the instructor, he'd look at me, and I went, sure. And I was like, I'm not going to be the one that holds the class back, right? I said, all right.
Yeah.
And then I think we actually did some moving and shooting too. And I was like, okay, whatever you want me to do. And so And yeah.
Well, you didn't know that you should do it, so that's why you did it. You know, when you don't have self-imposed limitations, and they say, well, good, you know, they're giving you permission to do it, so you don't know that it's an advanced class. You're just doing what they're telling you, which makes sense.
Exactly, and if they wouldn't have had me doing things that they didn't think I was possible for me to do, so I was like, okay, and I wasn't good at loading magazines. I didn't have a loader. I was doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was really slow, and it was funny.
I don't
funny.
Like loaders. I don't think they're that good for the magazines or for anything. It's just, you're not seating, when you seat each round yourself, when you actually put it in to the magazine, you can see where it goes. I think loaders can twist rounds and don't have them lined up properly. I think I guess. I've never seen this happen because I don't know who's using them and who isn't. But I personally just like to load each round myself just because.
There's those that they have new loaders now, but this was just like the hand loader, just to make an easy load because,
okay.
You know, after a while, if you're going through a few hundred rounds, it kind of gets sore on your thumb. But in my classes,
that's a problem. depending on the strength of your magazines. Yeah, it does. Yeah. That's a little hassle. Yeah.
But I do make sure all my students do know how to do it without any assistance because there's no point because in a crisis situation, you might not have a loader handy. So you want to be able to do that, you know, without one. But all of a sudden, I thought it was so sweet of these guys to help me load my magazines. Well, what it was, I was so freaking slow and they wanted to get back to doing some live fire. I thought that was funny. After I found that out, I thought, oh, that's funny. That's how I got it. That was my start. And basically I started, my goal was to have, to go out once a month just to keep my skills up to shoot at this outdoor range. And I'd have a firearm at one point I said, okay, I'm going to carry. I have a carry firearm and a home defense firearm or range practice firearm. Mm-hmm. That was my goal, was to have two different ones. And since then, I've expanded that goal. I've got a couple more than that. But it took me, because this was going to be a major purchase for me, right? And I was only going to get one gun that I was going to shoot at the range and one gun for self-defense. So I wanted to try just about every gun I could. And when I became a member at this range, the members would bring in all their guns and say, here, try this, try that. Cause it's like a family when you get into the firearms industry or firearms, any type of an event. And they're very helpful. You know, try this, try that. And it took me a while to decide which one I wanted to, that I felt I was comfortable with, and finally order it. I think it took 4 or 5 months for me to find the one that I
actually
wanted. And then, of course,
you know, they last for, you know, guns last for several generations. So you're buying for your great grandkids, you know. So it makes sense to take your time when you do it. People don't realize these things, they're made to last. They're engineered extremely well. And people think that the cost of guns is high, but compared to how long they last and what you can do with them, they're actually not that expensive. Given the, you know, your investment over 100 years, maybe, you know, people are still getting collectibles at 100 years old and the technology is a lot better now. I mean, how long is a Glock going to last? You know?
Exactly. And that's another thing I love when I see an old gun, an antique, and just to hold it and handle it and go, oh, I wonder if he shot this, especially ones that came for in wars and battles. And so,
well, if you look at the old police guns, like the 38s, you know, that were made in the early 1900s, they were hand done. They had every one of them was hand adjusted. The parts were usually a little bit oversized, and they were filed to fit perfectly. Those things, the double action on some of those early triggers that were hand done. I mean, now gunsmiths do it. Now it comes by request, and you can buy a pretty good trigger from the factory. But in the old days, factories weren't so good, and the tolerances weren't as good as they are now. And so, when someone had handmade a police gun or some other gun for somebody, they were as smooth as butter. I mean, they were just, you know, the action was so incredible. And people, you know, there are very few places where you see, you know, man-made machinery or things that have been played with. And people, I guess they sort of lose their appreciation in this instant world of computers. You know, the cars are computerized, everything else. But the idea of working parts, working together, that somebody actually went in and hand-did, and just as it all works together, you know, especially a revolver, which has to have a lot of things work properly in order for them to work. People don't realize that. Revolvers are complex, much more complex in many ways than the modern semi-auto, but they didn't have the engineering to create the semi-auto. But a lot of things, and I've seen a revolver stop and jam on one grain of powder. I know, it happened to me. You know, and what's going on? You know, it's like one grain of powder got caught. I mean, it's rare, but it happens. And so, but just the idea of the machinery, I could see the attraction for the older guns. Have you ever had a chance to fire an older 38? Or just to handle it and, you know, go through the action and see how it works. This is pretty incredible.
No. No, okay. I have not. No. But the other thing I like is, because I was, before my surgery, I was getting into sporting clays. Some of those shotguns where you can go pick out a block of wood and then they just keep working it until it fits you like a glove. I'm like, wow. And just to imagine that years before, like you're talking about, that's a lot of craftsmanship. And are they still doing it? Are there people out there that still know how to do that, you think?
Yeah. But a lot of it's been taken over. Like instead of having a custom-made stock, and they used to do it, they would measure a stock for you. You know, stock's the wood part that goes up against your shoulder, folks, just to make sure. But there are non-gun people. See, we're talking to people around the world who will never have the chance to own firearms. And we're not doing this to make you feel bad, but we're doing this to realize that if you get your freedom like we have our freedom, as limited as it is right now, that all you folks can do this. The Italian shotguns, Benelli, Beretta.
Oh, yeah.
There are people that Italians are great when it comes. You know, look at the Ferrari as opposed to you know, your basic Chevy Impala. There's a big difference. I mean, there's a place for craftsmanship, and I think we're losing a lot of it. There's an aircraft called the Bianca Viking. It's Italian, too. Handmade. Wood, canvas, engine, custom interior, leather, walnut grain, wood, you know, instrument panel, I mean, the whole bit. And they only make about maybe like 100 a year. If they still, I don't even know if they still are making, but they only make about 100 aircraft a year. I've seen them. They're amazing airplanes. So I love the idea of craftsmanship. And they used to fit you. They'd measure your arm. They'd measure the distance, you know, head to shoulder and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they would custom make a shotgun just for you. Nowadays, you got different rubber pads. You know, you can sort of extend and do it. And so a lot of like, quick ways to do it. But the old crafts folks, they're still there, but you're going to pay for it because it's not as wide scale as it used to be. But it's there.
Exactly. And when you talk about being fitted to your shotgun, I shot three gun for a few years. One of those things, you don't know what you don't know. And I thought, well, I guess this is right. And then I found out it's a Benelli. And I found out there were a few things that weren't set right for a right-hander because somehow they thought it was left-handed. So some things weren't set right. And then I actually went to a shotgun gunsmith in Cole's Gunsmith, and I took it in, and he goes, you know, that's not fit for you. You know, the cheek weld wasn't right because everybody kept saying my cheek weld. I kept coming off the stock, and they fitted it, you know. I'm like, whoa. Now maybe
big difference. Yeah, this is why we buy shoes the right size because they work better. You know, you have to buy a gun the right size too. They don't realize it. Your gun has to be the right size. And people are like, what the hell are you talking about, Greg? No, it's true. Your gun has to be the right size. It just does.
Exactly. Even in a pistol, you know, some, like a lot of women have small hands. So, you know, if you have a grip that's too big for them, it's hard to handle, hard to manipulate it too. So
a lot of guys have small hands too, but they won't admit it.
well, that's true. Okay, but it's true. You don't. I mean, I never thought of it that way. And then when I got into more in the, you know, firearms instructor and took a lot of classes with a lot of different people, a lot of different awesome instructors, you know, you learn. And I went, oh, well, there we go. Who knew?
Exactly.
So it's not. And lots of times, that's why it's that question of, well, what kind of gun do you think I should get? What kind of pistol do you think I should get? I said, one that you're comfortable with, one that you're going to use. You know, I can't say, oh, get this. This will be perfect for you. You know, mm-hmm. It's just like buying shoes. Which ones should I get? Ones that fit your foot and feel comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got lumberjack hands. I mean, I've got the space between my little finger and thumb is huge. You know, I can catch, you know, basketballs, you know, with my hand. it's just weird. So this has caused me problems with guitar playing, speaking of right size. I bought a guitar sort of by accident several years ago with a wider neck because it had this Eddie Van Halen tremolo bar to it, and it could only be fit on a wider neck, and I had trouble playing it at first because I was used to the more narrow necks. But the more narrow necks, I couldn't play. I could only get so good with them because the strings were too close together. And when you got lumberjack hands, strings that are too close together, your fingers kind of bunch up on each other, and you can't play. You certainly can't play fast, and I like playing fast, even though I'm not good at it. So, again, guitars, you get the right size neck. You know, people say, what's the right guitar for me? Oh, well, I want Eddie Van Halen's guitar. Well, Eddie Van Halen's guitar works for Eddie Van Halen. You need the guitar that's going to work for you. And the same thing goes with caliber. You know, people think, well, I'm going to get a 45 because that's a big bullet. Well, can you shoot it? You know, you're better off with a 9mm that you're accurate with than a 45 that kind of goes where it goes because you're afraid of the fringe, afraid of the, did I say afraid of the fringe? This is the end of the week. I got to go home. Yesterday was exhausting. We had an amazing show. Anyway, but afraid of the flinch. If you're worried about the recoil, if you're worried about stuff like that, then you're never going to shoot well. So you got to find the caliber that works for you. I have a question too. When you teach women, do you use foam earplug and headsets? Because that's the way I introduce people to shooting, because it cuts down on the noise and that cuts down on the flinch.
I have my own ear pro that I give them electronic, so they can hear me when we're not shooting. And it's an outdoor range, and we're the only ones in the bay. If you're indoors, definitely, double ear pro is a lot better. But no, that's normally what I do is just the electronic ear pro.
Yeah, outside.
And that's why I like that's why I like teaching outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, sometimes they have those enclosed spaces, these little shooting bays, and the walls and everything around because they want to kind of channel where you shoot. It's almost like being inside. Ranges, don't do that. You know, but do you teach men students at all? I'm just curious, or is it mostly women?
No, I do men too. Teach men. Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes I get husband and wife groups that, you know, they want to come in together, which is also cool.
Okay. Something I noticed when I learned to shoot, and I had my experience was a little different. I was, you know, somewhat recently married and feeling very protective, and we had a couple of murders on our street. I mean, that was unusual, but it happened. So, you know, in my family growing up, guns were like, you couldn't even say the word. I mean, the word gun was bad. I had ultra-socialist, feminist, you know, very left folks. And so, you know, any talk of guns was like, you know, especially, you know, by Mommy Dearest was like forbidden. So, of course, I'm curious, but, you know, as far as I was concerned, they were bad things. And only bad people own guns, right? Until I had a driving instructor for driver's ed in high school that talked about his guns. This is in liberal New England where, you know, again, it's not something that's really talked about. And he made me realize that it's really an individual decision. But what I found when I eventually moved to California and had the situation where I felt I had to get a gun, I sought lessons, you know, like any normal person would do, at least I hope so. But what I found interesting that as a guy, it's the opposite of women. Women are treated like they don't know anything. Guys are treated like we're supposed to know because we're guys. So men can be intimidated in shooting as new shooters just as easily as women for exactly the opposite reason. You know, and they say, what caliber do you shoot? And if the guy says, well, I don't really know, they don't want to show that they don't really know because it's assumed that as a guy, you do know. And it's like, you know, we have like the mechanic gene. We're supposed to know what's wrong with the car. I don't know what's wrong with the car. That's why I have a mechanic. You know, but in the same way, I had to learn about guns. Now I know. But so when I first started, there was a lot of intimidation that you'd be made fun of as a man for not knowing because you're expected to have the gun gene, you know, the one that's next to the take out the garbage gene and the one that, you know, knows the cars. So I don't know if you've seen that at all, but I'd be curious your opinion.
Well, so what I do see sometimes is maybe that's why they want to put on this air like they know what they're doing. And then if you make a correction to them, some of them, not all of them, will not even pay attention to their correction. And I'm like, okay. Or I'll give them a drill, and then they're doing headshots instead of body shots. And I went, so I'm looking at the target going, okay, so what were you aiming at? Oh, I thought I'd do a headshot. And I went, how about if we stick to the drill that I'm giving you?
Yeah. They came to you for instruction, you know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, I see that as a flight instructor. I had, especially I noticed guys that would come to me after, being on their computer simulator with their mouse, and they think that if they can sit in their living room and work their computer simulator, they'll be great in the clouds in a real airplane. No. You know, but it was really funny, and they would blame me or blame the clouds or blame something. It's like, this is the real world. You know, you came to me for instruction. If you didn't want to listen to what I had to say, why did you come to me for instruction? You know, and I bet you know, you probably noticed a similar kind of thing. It's like, why are you here? If you're not going to, listen to what I say and do the drills, you know, that's the whole point of going to an instructor. But sometimes folks,
exactly.
They know best. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, or they're not open-minded to change, which might even make them better at whatever, better at pilot or better at handling their firearms. So, yeah, you see kind of all different types of people like that. But some of
yep.
them are just amazing. They'll go, oh, okay, and they'll say, oh, try this. You know, this might help you with this grip. And they're like, wow, that's a big difference. And like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because, even in firearms, there's not just one way that you could, one way to do things. You always have to be safe, of course. But some instructors, they'll do a different grip. And sometimes it's about finding what works best for you. I always tell them that this isn't the only way. You'll get another instructor and they'll say, oh, try this stance or do this stance. And I said, do what works for you. Try it and see what's best
mm-hmm.
for you.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I have, for some reason, a large distance from my eyes to my shoulder. I've just, long head, neck, full of too much gray matter, which I hope to be able to use, most of someday. But the point is, I have trouble shooting a rifle. They're not made for me. I have to have the scopes a little higher. So consequently, my rifle shooting is always going to be limited because ergonomically, I don't fit. I don't fit the classic gun unless I get maybe I'll get an AR-15, I'll get Chappie to make me one that's tailored to me. But, especially when you do prone position shooting, when you're laid out there, with the scope and the rifle, my head and eyes do not line up with my shoulder in a way that is conducive to rifle shooting. So that's why I've always been better with a handgun. Now I can shoot a 357 off a bench rest and keep, the rounds at 100 yards, open sights, in about a 1 foot circle. That's unusual. I can't see for, I have my shoulder and head in the wrong place, but my lumberjack hands are amazingly steady. So consequently I do more pistol shooting simply because ergonomically it fits me better. And that's something that
yeah,
people need to think too. Yeah.
That's awesome. You can do that.
Oh, it's really funny when I shoot better than some guy with a scope rifle right beside me. And they're looking at me with my Ruger GP100 or my Smith & Wesson 686 with the 6-inch barrel, and I literally freeze. I absolutely freeze with a handgun. It doesn't move at all until the bullet is long gone, and it's like a Zen thing. I used to shoot a 45 at a hillside. They had these 18-inch steel plates at 150 yards. This is back in California, and you have the guys on the bench, sitting there with their scope rifles, shooting at these 18-inch targets at 150 yards, and I'd sit there offhand with a 45. Of course, the bullet would take a while to get there. We'd have a conversation as it was on its way. But by the time it got there, we'd usually hit the target. And for most of it, we get a little crazy here when it comes to times. But, yeah, 45 is a very slow bullet, but it's very big and very heavy and very effective. But, yeah, I could knock down a steel target, not every time, but I'd say maybe 70% of my shots at 150 yards offhand with a 45 would knock down a steel plate. And people were just like, how do you do that? Well, because I can't shoot a rifle. Like, what? Yeah, I'm better with this thing. So all these are the weird things that all our weird body types and things have. And, the male-female thing and, the tall versus short and the big hands versus small hands. I think the lumberjack hands that I have contribute to me shooting a pistol very well and can make it completely useless for a rifle. I can't, my hand doesn't fit in a lever action. You're going to have to get, an oversized. The part that you ever for y'all folks that watch The Rifleman, where he rips those shots out, pulling that lever down. My hand doesn't fit; it just doesn't. You know, so like, you know, it's weird. Yeah. I don't know where Jim is. Is Jim off today? I don't think so. He should be calling in by now.
Yeah.
We'll keep chatting. Otherwise, I'll say the things I said in the first half hour that probably got lost in the transmission. At least the show's still on, so, you know.
Yeah, because I do have to go. I actually am going to the range right now to help someone exercise their Second Amendment right.
there we go.
Yeah, so I'm just going to, just as a reminder, anyone that's interested in the DC Project team match, go to dcproject.info, and you can go to the match tab and sign up or be a sponsor. Or if you're interested in just getting involved with us, we're Women for Gun Rights. We're nationwide, nonpartisan. You can also sign up there. There's a representative in every state, so you'll be hooked up with the state director for each state. And that's it for today for DC Project Women and Guns. And I'm going to sign off here on Action Radio. And you guys have a wonderful weekend.
You're so good at that now. Yeah, it's wonderful. All right, Shirley, have fun. Go compete. Go teach people, and we'll spread the gospel of guns. Can I say that? I think I just did.
Whoa, that's another good one.
All right, now. We don't have a conversation or a report. I think you and I have a workshop because we're always coming up with stuff.
That's true.
So go preach the gospel of guns, and we'll talk next week.
All right.
Thanks, Shirley.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, so again, Jim, I'm not sure what's going on. Maybe he heard that we weren't on the air or something like that. I'm just going to play a shorter version of our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. I'll be working on the number 11. I keep wanting to do that, but so much is going on with our Australian Bill of Rights that I haven't had as much of a chance. That's coming out next week. We've got a couple of different draft versions. We've got just the rights. We've got the entire slideshow. Jen Clark is perfecting and working all that right now. And I'm not sure what happened to the show, but it looks like I'm on on my cell phone this morning, and so I apologize for that, but apparently the show shut me down and didn't tell me, so I still have to get after Blog Talk to see if we can get digital meters, and we shall go from there. Back in a couple of minutes.
This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever. Because they came from a power higher than government, that we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers.
Anyway, we're on the cell phone this morning because something happened to my signal. I'm not sure what. But at least with the cell phone, I know I can call in. So I'm just kind of, you know, putting my mic cord back. I'm going to get after Blog Talk Radio again because this is crazy. The idea that I don't have any way of telling when my microphone is not broadcasting into the computer. Like I say, it went silent for a second, and then it came back. And I guess at that point, it just arbitrarily cut out. And so the first part of the show is missing, which is no fun. So we've got Derek Park coming in at the bottom of this hour. Jim Dykes, I'm not sure. Again, things happen. So when they happen, I just, you know, continue on with other stuff. And so I got an article here from a friend of mine. Again, our theme today, Twitter deals, Earth Day propaganda, and needless inflation. I don't know how much you heard of the article that I went over from Gregory Wrightstone on Earth Day and why, you know, we don't really need one anymore because things are pretty good. That's just one of the flaws in the system. But I'll quote that. You know, well, let me actually, I've got it here. I'll tell you where to find the article that I covered. And you know what? I think I got rid of it. Anyway, go to the CO2 Coalition, and that's what Gregory Wrightstone runs, and you'll find out all about the virtues of carbon dioxide and the evils of Earth Day. All right, there we go. So this one's California Globe. This is a friend of mine, Katie Grimes, who's an investigative reporter. She's got some of an article quoted by some other folks here, but she says, Twitter's board of toddlers. Which I love that. Twitter's board of toddlers would rather collapse company than sell to Elon Musk. And so company boards have a fiduciary duty. We talked about this a couple times with Jonathan Mosley and with Derek Park. Company boards have a fiduciary duty to do what is best for the shareholders. And that's Katie Grimes, April 21st. So again, yesterday. Twitter's board of directors gathered this week to sign what sounds like a suicide pact. And that's according to attorney Jonathan Turley, great constitutionalist, who I disagree with occasionally. Well, actually more than that. Anyway, wrote in The Hill, and The Hill is a rather, used to be a pretty decent publication, now it's quite liberal. The Hill, in an article appropriately titled, Twitter faces the nightmare of being forced into free speech. Oh, no. It says, Twitter board unanimously voted to swallow the poison pill to tank the value of the social media giant shares rather than allow billionaire Elon Musk to buy the company. And what does Elon Musk want to do? Oh, no. Bring free speech to a free speech, based company, Twitter. The article says the board would rather – oh, I already read that. Oh, yeah, the board would rather collapse Twitter than let Elon Musk purchase it. This behavior exemplifies a toddler who would rather break a toy than let a sibling have it. Shit, we've all been there, right? This is also evidence that the Twitter board is not made up of capitalists, as they are not operating as a traditional for-profit business, but rather as a means to an end platform. Yeah, they're basically a socialist Marxist propaganda arm of the government and the Democrat Party. Yeah, okay, I said that. Article says, Turley explains, company boards have a fiduciary duty to do what is best for shareholders, which usually is measured in share values. Yeah, you got to make the company more valuable, right? Twitter has long done the opposite. It has virtually written off many conservatives and a large portion of its prospective market, with years of arbitrary censorship of dissenting views on everything from gender identity to global warming, election fraud, and the pandemic. Yeah, see, that's the thing I never understood, too, and I've talked about this as well, is like Twitter, you know, if they have a fiduciary responsibility, how can they, you know, basically cut out half of their customer base? You know, in other words, conservatives. And, of course, the answer is they can't. If they're going to exemplify that fiduciary duty. And now Katie says, now the Wall Street Journal reports Tesla, chief executive Elon Musk disclosed Thursday that he has received commitment letters for $46.5 billion in funding to finance his offer to buy Twitter. So the offer is there, and he's not using his own money. And he's got financing, which actually is pretty smart. So why it's smart, I'm going to ask Derek that. But apparently that's the right thing to do. Quote here, in a securities filing, Mr. Musk, who also said that given the lack of a response from Twitter's board, he is now exploring a tender offer to acquire shares of Twitter directly from shareholders, though he said he hasn't decided whether to do so. I'm not sure what a tender offer is either. I'm going to talk to Derek about that as well. Mr. Musk made a non-binding $43 billion bid for Twitter on April 14th. So now we wait and see. Musk owns 73,486,938 shares of Twitter, which represents a 9.2 passive stake in the company, according to the Securities and Exchange Commission, that would be the SEC, 13G filing released Monday. Twitter shares closed up 27% after Elon Musk takes 9% stake in the social media company, and that's reported by CNBC. Musk has challenged Twitter censorship of certain political thought and free speech of mostly conservatives. No kidding. Given that Twitter serves as a de facto public town square, failure to adhere to free speech principles fundamentally undermines democracy. What should be done? Well, first of all, stop using the word democracy. We're a republic. But then the quote said, Musk tweeted this in March when he was clearly contemplating his next move. So the first thing I need to do with Elon Musk is educate him on the difference between a republic and a democracy. But, you know, he's considering he's doing a lot better than I am. Maybe it's he who should educate me. But that's where we stand right now. All right. We got an inflation thing here, and I got a little bit of time. So let me talk about something a bit different. And this is we had this article before on Estonia. Right. And this comes from the FEE, I think it's the Federation for Economic Education. And that was a reprint of another article from the Intellectual Takeout, but the article Intellectual Takeout has been intellectually taken down. So we don't have that. I went over that article before, but that's not what I wanted to talk about. I've always had the belief that any nation can be as free as – can be as prosperous as the United States if they're as economically free as the United States, at least the way we used to be. And so this article had several principles. That Estonia, you know, it's one of the three countries, not the Baltics, that's Yugoslavia. I forget what they call these countries. Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, up in the upper right corner of Eastern Europe, right next to the Soviet Union. So the Russian Federation. So they border it, and they've had mixed degrees of success. They're also, I think below them is Belarus, below that is Ukraine, below that is Turkey. You know, Romania, Moldova, all those countries too. So we're talking Eastern Europe. So Estonia is one of those places that was Soviet dominated. You know, they were then after they were dominated by the Germans in World War II, they were dominated by the Russians after World War II. They were made a communist state by force, and their economy sucked, and life was miserable. And then, of course, when these countries got their independence in the early 90s, then when the wall came down, or late 80s, early 90s, I'm not sure exactly when Estonia got their independence, but it hasn't been that long. And they're incredibly prosperous now, more so per capita than we are. Well, how did that happen? Well, because they got more economic freedom. So I went through the article and I wrote down the specific points of what makes an economy free. And if we did this, okay, and if other countries in Central and South America did this, and countries around the world did this, there'd be no reason to come here illegally because they would have the same prosperous economy we have. The first thing, number one of the bullet points, is free markets, free of government engineering. Okay, you look at Solyndra, the solar market, you know, green energy, the Green New Deal, all these things that they engineered are corporate welfare, you know, giving Archer Daniels Midland an ethanol subsidy, all big pharma, no liability. So all these things that that restrict a free market, bailing out companies that fail because they're, quote, too big to fail. No, they're not. You know, so all the things the government does to the market, they shouldn't do, interfering with the free market that allows for the success or failure of businesses on their own. That's what a market is. That's the first thing you do. So you free all the markets of all the crap, all the government engineering. Second thing, monetary reform. Stop spending your way into prosperity. All you do is spend your way into debt. Debt creates the need to print money. Printing money creates inflation. Inflation creates a bad economy, which puts you more in debt. You know, once you start down that road, it's a big difference. So you need monetary reform. There's fiscal policy and monetary policy. Maybe fiscal is the spending. I have to ask Derek about that. I think I may be misspeaking, and I hate to do it. Let me look up let me spend a second here to look up monetary policy in my online dictionary, as I'm sitting here on the phone, kind of crouched over my cell phone, trying to do this properly. So monetary, monetary, relating to money or currency, documents with little or no monetary value. Well, that doesn't help me. Let's look at fiscal, because that's going to help me out. I think fiscal spending, FISCAL. So what happens when I get FISL? I get FISL. I just put the C in there, fiscal. Here we go. Relating to government revenue, especially taxes, monetary and fiscal policy, mainly North American, relating to financial matters, domestic fiscal crisis. Well, they're not telling me what it is. A legal or treasury official in some countries. So that's not good either. All right. I think if I remember the difference, let me see if I can do this properly. Fiscal is what you spend. In other words, the fiscal year, the budget is what you spend. Monetary is how you regulate the money, interest rates, printing of money, things like that. So let me take out that. So monetary reform. In other words, you've got to maintain low interest rates, use the things that you have. First of all, get rid of the Federal Reserve. But have a monetary system where the money is actually managed properly, interest rates, treasuries, things like that. Next thing, free trade zones on a level playing field. And so you've got to have free trade. You know, that goes along with free markets. And so free markets are what you have. Free trade is what you have with the rest of the world. So if you're going to be able to trade, you know, it has to be open. You can't have massive tariffs, massive taxes. You can't have protectionism. You can't have all the things that China wants to do. In other words, they want to protect their markets and invade ours. Yeah, it didn't work. Got to have a free trade and a level playing field. Balanced budget. You can't spend. This is fiscal policy. Balanced budgets. You can't spend more than you take in. Okay. And so we can balance our budget anytime we want. Although the Congress has to do is spend less money, borrow, and not borrow any money. Well, of course, then their constituents won't get all the freebies that they want. So that's an election problem. But if you balance your budget, if you stop spending more than you're taking in, you know, you have a balanced budget. If you spend less than you take in, you have a surplus. Okay? So if you spend more than you take in, you have a deficit. If you spend exactly what you take in, you have a balanced budget. And if you spend less than you take in, you have a surplus. And the surplus could be used to reduce the national debt. There you go. Next one, privatization of all state-owned companies. Okay, no Solyndras, no businesses, no government cooperative anything. Businesses are private. Also, they have a flat income tax. I recommend 10%. And, of course, abolishing the that would be good. I think a national sales tax would be even better. But you got to get rid of the income tax before you bring in a national sales tax, or you're going to get both. But a flat income tax applies the same to everybody. Everybody pays 10%. Okay, there you go. No deductions, no exemptions, no nothing. You pay your 10%. That's why a sales tax would be better. That way you could regulate how much tax you pay based on how much you spend. Next one, low national debt, less than 10% GDP. Estonia has a 9.5% of GDP national debt. That's nothing. Ours is over 100%. We actually have a national debt greater than our national economy. Well, that should disgust you. It should also fill you full of fear because that's a problem. Also, low to no corporate tax. I would abolish the corporate tax. Oh, but what about those corporations making billions of dollars? Okay, fine. You know, that's what corporations are supposed to do. But if they do that, there's going to be tremendous incentive to reinvest, to hire more people, to innovate more, to create more things, and to stay ahead of their competitors. So a lot of that money is going to go back into the company. That's how it works. And if they buy private yachts and they buy big houses, then that's going to help the people that make private yachts and big houses. So what's your problem? So are you basing your corporate tax on envy? Or on sound fiscal and monetary policy? You got to ask yourself that. And the last one they have is that realizing that human progress is closely linked to economic freedom. So if you can have economic freedom, you're going to have human progress. All right. And that's I just found that interesting. So that's the Estonian model. And if all the countries in Central and South America, like El Salvador, if El Salvador adopted that same economic model, they'd be just as well off as Estonia, just as financially sound, and they would be. You know, the folks would be rushing here, you know, they're rushing for the benefits. So it's not that we have that sound in the economy because we don't. They're coming here for our money. They're coming here for a transfer of wealth from them to us. Which brings us to Sarah Carter. Biden's plan will worsen inflation, disproportionately harm minority families and small businesses. And this was published April 20th, so just a couple of days ago, Sarah Carter and staff. Republicans on the House Ways and Means Committee put out a press release detailing how Biden tax hikes increased burdens for taxpayers, and how the Democrat policies disproportionately harm minority families and small businesses. Yeah, why minority families and small businesses even vote for Democrats is beyond me, but they do. Hopefully that'll be corrected. And so, but I don't think Republicans are the answer either. You know, independents, strong independents that know what they're doing and don't have an allegiance to a party that tells them what to do is the best hope for our legislators. So the article says the United States is suffering a 40-year high inflation, and Biden's budget includes further tax hikes on Americans and over 1 million small businesses. His plans reverse the gains made under the Republican-led Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which, of course, is Trump, right? The press release quotes President and CEO of the Jobs Creators Network, Alfredo Ortiz, who testified during the Ways and Means Committee hearing in April. Ortiz wrote up an op-ed for Breitbart News in which he wrote, first of all, he said President Biden. I'll let that go. Biden's recently announced budget proposes raising taxes by $2.5 trillion. That's with a T, $2.5 trillion. He plans to hike taxes by one-third on the approximately 1 million small businesses structured as corporations. Well, so no structure as a corporation, be a partnership or be a single operator. Anyway, he says he also wants to raise taxes on successful Americans and small businesses structured as pastors. I have no idea what that is. Small business depends on tax certainty, according to the article, to bring the economy and labor market back to pre-pandemic levels. Small businesses and ordinary Americans also need these tax savings to help blunt the impact of historic inflation caused by Democrats' reckless spending that's devalued the dollar. This week, the Bureau of Labor Statistics announced that consumer prices have risen by 8.5% and wholesale prices by 11.2% over the previous year, eliminating the TCJA would compound the pain of this inflation tax. Yeah, it's really simple. You can't do this. You can't keep screwing around with the economy. And this is the thing I don't understand. You know, just to put it out here before Derek gets here, the gelding old party, the Republicans, could have stopped Brandon from illegally occupying the White House several times. You know, Mike Pence could have done it by sending the electors back to the states and have them put forward, the state legislatures put forward their Trump electors. We know that, okay? So Brandon's in office every day because Republicans want him in office. Well, that should scare you. Yeah. In other words, the Republican Party, the geldings, don't want a prosperous America. Because if they did, they never would have let Brandon take office illegally. They would have put Trump in. They would have found a way to do it. And very simply, sent back the electors. Well, it might have taken a while, but, you know. I would have waited a month or so for a debate over whose electors, you know, have standing as opposed to anything else. And that's what happened. But they didn't do it because the geldings won't do it, because the geldings would rather have their business as usual and their privileges than have a great America. Pianki's on the line. Let's get him on here and see if he heard what happened during my early part of the show. So I'm on the telephone this morning, Pianki. Do you know exactly when I cut out? Were you listening earlier in the first half hour? Because apparently my microphone left the show and didn't tell me.
No, I didn't. Greg, I was doing a lot of extra work. Didn't get to sleep till about 5 o'clock myself. So.
Oh, my goodness. 5 o'clock this morning? That's crazy.
That's the way it goes. You're in a war, man. You can't be like, what is the Swedish Navy? They take the weekend off.
Oh, really? I believe it.
Yeah. Everybody goes home on Friday and come back Monday.
Yeah, that's why the Japanese attacked us on Sunday morning. Because they knew would be a brunch, you know, on a golf course. Yeah, go ahead.
You're talking about the taxes. Isn't it wonderful how DeSantis took away Walt Disney's tax exemption because of their behavior?
Yeah, well, the question is why they ever had it in the first place. Not only was it a tax, it was like they were their own governing body. They were like their own little legislature. You know, in other words, I guess Florida was so desperate to get Disney World as opposed to California or any other place, they offered Disney. And this happens a lot. Baseball stadiums, football stadiums, you know, big corporations, you know, New York does this. They offered like no taxes for 10 years. Governments do this all the time to attract business. There's nothing wrong with it. It makes perfect sense, except in the case of Disney, which is so corrupt, so disgusting, and so evil towards our kids, but they had this special exemption. They had this, you know, tax-independent or tax-free zone that they were in, and not only DeSantis, but the state legislature, both houses. You know, so we have actual Republicans here. You know, they haven't given us open carry yet like they should, because that's what the Constitution says, but at least they put Disney on the same footing as every other company having to pay their taxes. That's a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. It's going to cost them over $200 million a year.
Well, it should.
So that makes sense.
Actually, it's not going to cost them anything. Yeah, it won't cost them anything. It shouldn't have cost them for the last, I don't know, however many, 20, 30 years they had this special exemption. So it's not like they're being treated differently. They're finally being treated the same as other companies.
Well, they will have to cough up at least what people project, over $200 million a year that they weren't paying toward the state revenue.
Yeah, but as we know, corporate taxes, all they're going to do is increase the prices. You know, they're going to make that up somehow. Corporations don't pay taxes. I mean, as much as somebody didn't get too excited about it. Everybody goes, oh man, we're going to suck into that corporation. They're going to pay $200 million extra taxes. Where do you think that $200 million comes from? It comes from people going to Disney World, you know, paying for their ride tickets, waiting 4 hours, you know, for two rides per day. It's a crazy place. So if you really want to affect Disney, don't go. Don't go there.
But that's going to happen too, I think.
Well, I think it's already happening. I think they lost like 9 million subscribers when they mischaracterize the Parents Protection Act as the Don't Say Gay bill, because it doesn't say gay, you know. And what kind of sick people want 4-year-olds, you know, who have enough time trying to, or 5-year-olds, to have enough time trying to figure out who they are in the world? You know, they want to know whether they're a boy or a girl, so they have an identity. And so what they're really doing is stripping, and I don't think people have thought about this too, the whole idea of this whole gender, you know, confusion thing where they let kids decide for themselves is to strip them of any identity that they can latch onto so that they're confused. If they're confused about whether they're a boy or a girl, they can be confused about anything. So that is cruel. It's cruel not to tell a 5-year-old, you know, if they're a boy or a girl, that they're a boy or a girl. What's wrong with that?
It's cruelty.
Yeah. So Disney's only paying taxes that they should be paying. Corporate taxes are passed on to the customer anyway. So corporations, which, you know, I will talk to Derek about this. He's on the line right now. But corporations, you know, it's not like you're, you know, it's not like somebody, like a person, when you pay income tax, it really, it comes out of your pocket. It comes out of your wallet. You know, you actually physically pay, or it's already been withheld, and you get a little bit of a refund if you paid too much. Talk about that, too, because I want to end the withholding tax. But all this stuff that's going on with Disney, the real way to affect Disney is with an economic boycott. And, again, people are doing that because they think, you know, Disney sucks when it comes to treating our kids.
Yeah.
You know, kids, well, kids deserve to know whether they're a boy or a girl. Tell them.
Well, companies do. Corporations do pay taxes. I have a friend. I'm not in the business. He's a contractor, and he paid over $600,000 hard cash in taxes last year. So that notion that corporations don't, when I was a corporation, I paid taxes too. So that notion that corporations don't pay taxes is really not true. They do.
Well, I think it's different.
Pay taxes.
I think it's if your corporate income is your income, if you're a sole proprietor, that's different. Let's get Derek on. He'll straighten this out for us. He'll be able to tell us. Let's get his theme.
Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money.
Yeah, I'm on the cell phone this morning, but I'm still able to push the buttons. So at least we got that going. So, Derek, help us out here. Corporate taxes. I think you've been listening for a little bit to Bianchi and me. Who pays? Who really pays? Don't corporations pass them on? How does that all work out?
I mean, they do pay. You know, there's no way to avoid it. I mean, if tax law says that their corporate tax rate has gone up to 28%, then everybody pays it. You know, I mean, ideally, if there are other tax breaks because they're being taxed, like, so this is where it gets a little convoluted and gets into things that, I may not be aware, because there are, even though they have a certain rate, there are other benefits that they get, like if they provide a 401k, if they provide healthcare, if they provide, you know, HSAs, health savings account, or there's another one, an FSA, and I can't remember the acronym for that one. If they provide these benefits, the government will say, okay, yeah, you're paying this tax, but we're going to give you a tax break for however many employees you have. You know, so should it or could it be passed off to the consumer? More than likely, yes. You know, the consumer, if there is a higher tax rate and the company is inconvenienced, I guess, for lack of a better term, then yes, you know, it is passed off to the consumer. So going from, you're talking about a 7% increase from what we were, where we were there before. So maybe they didn't have time to pass it off to the consumer before their tax rate was lowered, or, you know, it's kind of hard to say.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to distinguish between a sole proprietorship. In other words, you know, someone's like a independent lawyer or they run a radio show or something like that, you know, and they're sole proprietor, that the money they get from their business goes to them. So, yeah, they're actually paying out. But if you're a corporation, you know, the corporate salaries are separate from the taxes. Now, if a corporation is when a corporation is taxed, they don't have the use of that money. They can try and raise it back by raising their prices, but in a competitive market, they can only do so much of that. But the difference is the corporate tax is not paid for by the board of directors, by the, you know, the employees, things like that. It's paid for by the corporation, which is separate. Whereas an income tax, a personal income tax, is paid by you or me or anybody that, that earns that income. So it comes directly out of our wallet. So that's the distinction I was making. And so corporations can pass the taxes on. But yes, if a corporation has a 28% tax rate, they're going to have 28% less money to use because of that tax. And that's going to impinge on other things like plowing money back in, as they say, you know, hiring more people, developing more, you know, tools, machinery, doing whatever it is that they do to improve the company. They can't, that money's not available to them. It, it goes to the government. And we know what happens when money goes to the government. So corporate taxes, the lower the tax, the better for everybody. It's better for the corporation because they don't have to raise prices as much. It's better for the economy because more corporations investing in their company means more innovation, more competition, better products. It benefits us because the cost of our goods is lower, and it benefits us because the government has less of our money to screw up with. How do
you do? So a lot of people don't understand that it's actually a double tax system. You know, it's kind of scary, you know, when you think about it. So when you employ people, right, you also have to pay the exact same tax for your employee that your employee pays to the government. So they effectively get taxed twice. So, you know, your company, you know, let's just say they create an account structure and they're a C corp or an S corp, right? You know, so and that's your two main structures, right? Typically, a C corp is going to be a bigger company. There's some other tax things that come with it. I don't want to get in that because, you know, I'm not in the business of getting tax advice. So I'm giving kind of general information. But, you know, so you set up your tax structure, right? You know, you have XYZ employee, you know. So XYZ employee makes $20,000 a year. They're taxed at 20%, you know. So they've got to pay $4,000, right? They pay their $4,000 to Uncle Sam. The employer also has to pay their federal income tax, their VI or Social Security. It's old age social. I can't remember what the OSCI stands for. And there's one more on there that I'm forgetting. But anyway, they have to pay the identical same taxes to the government that the person pays. So, you know, roughly another $4,000 the employer has to pay. So, you know, the government gets, you know, when somebody employs somebody, they get, you know, an extra tax rate because somebody's employing them. And that's what employers look for other benefits. Like, okay, if you provide them a 401k or a retirement plan, okay, we get a benefit for that, right? So ideally, that's money that the government doesn't have to pay tax on. You know, so some employers, they refuse to give you a match if you do a Roth 401k because that's money you've already paid tax on. And that would imply that that's money they've already paid tax on. So they would be like, no, we're not going to give you a match on that side because they can't get a benefit for it. Does that make sense?
Sort of. I'm a little confused though. Go ahead, Bianchi.
Yeah, I was an S corporation. So my corporate tax was the same thing as my person tax. A C corp pays taxes on the corporation. Then the owners of the corporation has to pay taxes, their own personal taxes, so they tax twice that way. The thing I liked about Donald Trump implemented a way where businesses could expense their purchases for equipment and so forth in 1 year rather than carrying it out into the future the way it was before. Doing that allow you to buy more equipment, take on more projects, hire more people, and start it all over again.
Mm-hmm. You can still do that. I mean, that hasn't changed. So, I mean, you know, the way it works is even if you're an S-Corp and a C-Corp, the taxes all work the same way. There's literally no difference other than there's an S and a C. I mean, ideally, C-Corps are going to be your bigger companies, 100 employees or more, right? That's just the basis. That now there are, I've got people that are C corps because there is a special benefit, and I can't remember what it is off the top of the head from being a C corp rather than an S corp. But you do have to meet certain criteria to be it. But ideally, it all works the same way. If you have a business account, you know, typically you've got some type of spending, you know, or a card or a checks or, you know, electronic transfers. If you have any type of business expense, i.e., you know, you need to buy supplies, i.e., you need to buy a car, whatever it is, you can do that through your business and, It's all written off in the business. So you can still do that. There's nothing changed from that.
Jackie?
As a person with an S-Corp, if my personal tax rate was, say, 15%, well, that corporation's tax rate was 15% also. Whereas going the C corporation tax rate may be 28%, and then I still have to pay taxes on, as an owner, I have to pay taxes on my own declared personal income. That way you tax twice. So there's disadvantages and advantages to all. But I just cringe when Democrats start talking about taxes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a difference, though. So, like, when you own your own business, there's creative ways that you can pay yourself. So you can pay yourself if you own your own business as income, or you can take a draw out of the business where the tax rate is actually lower. So if you take a draw out of the business, your tax rate, I want to say, is like 17%. If you pay yourself, it's whatever your income bracket is. So if you keep your income at, say, you know, the first bracket, which goes to like 50,000, you know, your tax rate's 12%, right? So not all that bad, right? You know, you make more than 50,000, then your tax rate for that next portion of your money up from 50,000 to, like, I think it's 170. It's actually a pretty big bracket that captures most everybody, goes up to 22%. You know, so that portion of your money from 50,000 to whatever it goes to, you pay 22%. 170 picks up. Once you cross that amount is taxed at 24%. So if you do the portion that you're paying income tax on, then you're opening yourself up for, you know, is your income higher for to getting health care? Is your income higher that now you can do a retirement plan so you can put money off to the side? If you're an individual owner and an S-Corp, you can do what's called a SEP IRA. You know, a SEP IRA, Simplified Employee Pension Plan, you know, you can do, you know, up to 25% of your income, i.e. you make $100,000, you put $25,000 in your SEP. You know, so it opens up some more doors for claiming more income. So the government kind of incentivizes you to do that. Now, ideally, if you take a draw from your business, that does not count as income, and it is taxed differently, but you cannot put money in a retirement plan. So, you know,
I hired the union workers, iron workers in particular, and they had their own health and welfare and pension plan. And the most ridiculous thing is Obama wanted to tax their health and welfare plan because it was considered a Cadillac plan in the fact that it paid everything. But the thing about that is that workers deferred putting money on their checks, and they directed toward increasing and shoring up their health and welfare plans and also their pension plan. So that was a terrible thing that he done. Hey, I guess Greg went to the tanning parlor. He had to pay extra tax.
Right. I'm not aware of that, you know, and I mean, I'd have to do research on it. I mean, I wouldn't doubt something like that was offered or happened.
I want to change things around. I want to get to Derek's support here in just a second, but there's one point that has always bothered me: the idea that of your tax for things like Social Security, Medicare, and state disability. I think those are the three you're talking about. That the employee pays 7.5% and the employer pays 7.5%. That's a lie. And it really bothers me because the money is not being lied about, but the perception is. So the self-employment tax is 15%. So if you are both the employer and the employee, you're paying 15% self-employment tax. And that's the same thing as the lie of the 7.5 employer, 7.5 employee. Because what's really happening is the company still has a 15% tax they're paying to the government. They say the employee pays 7.5%, but the company, that's 15% of the money that could have gone to you if there was no tax, you know, but the company's paying 15% to the government. So whether you pay a self-employment tax of 15% or a company pays 15% of the cost of hiring you, you're still not getting that money, even though they lie that they say that you're paying half and the company's paying half. We really need to get that truth out there so people understand what it is. Derek, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It should be a little bit more transparent. You know, the next thing is you know, not to get a little off subject, but, you know, all these people that tax double. I mean, there's no question about it.
You're cutting out a little bit after all these people. We missed a little bit of that.
You're still there right now? You hear me now better?
Yeah. Yeah, I do hear you now.
Sorry.
Yeah,
can you hear me now again?
Yes.
I said, I said they should be more transparent about it, but, not to get off subject, I said all these people that want universal health care, I said, wait till that happens, your tax rate's going to double. In order to cover all those costs and whatnot, I mean, all these people that think it's going to happen, there's no way to pay for something like that with the amount of the population that we have. So, your tax rate's going to go up.
We got 2 million illegals. That's going to bankrupt any national healthcare system because they're going to charge everything and they're going to have their friends and family come in and this is going to be never ending. See, the problem with the socialized medicine scheme is that people with a hangnail go to the emergency room, whereas who are paying, who have either medical savings accounts or have a voucher or have so much money available, they're going to look for cost competitive things. They may choose generic drugs over brand name patented medicine, which does the same thing, simply to save money. So they'll have more money in their savings account or more money on their voucher to spend more money for other things. So the market forces work. And if you have a completely medical system devoid of any market forces, of any choices, of any prices, of any anything, then people, they don't care how much they spend because most people are not taxed. What is it, like 40 of the taxes are paid mostly by like the top half of income earners. The bottom half, actually 51-52%, don't pay any tax. After the mortgage interest deduction, the standard deduction, most people aren't paying any tax at all, right?
I'd say if you make less than $50,000 a year, you're paying like 10% or less. That's a fact.
Yep. Junkie?
And now Brandon wants to tax unrealized gains. Just because you got a stolen a stock and the price goes up, but you still leave it there to continue to invest, they want to tax. They want to have a tax on the market and when you sell your home. They want to
That's only for people that make $100 million or more. It's a proposal
for now.
It's not for anybody. It's not for the common people. It's really to capture major business owners when they offload their stock at very specific times and strategic times to avoid tax liability and for things like. They're stopping Roth conversions for, major business owners and things because the owner of Oracle had $5 billion inside of a Roth IRA that he will never pay tax on again. $5 billion. Okay. So they're whoever his person is that's got all this money, they're very strategic in getting it into a Roth IRA. Ideally, the government's trying to shut that off.
Well,
if it's legal, it's legal. I don't care.
Yeah, but if it's legal, it's legal. I don't care neither. Why do you want to tax a person? Because they're smart.
It's because they have a bunch of money and they have high tax potential. That's why.
They're trying to take people's money.
Yeah, that's an envy problem, not an economic problem, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's get your report before we as soon as you're ready.
I think they need to go back to the old meaning of apportionment. If a state has $300,000, their portion is divided up amongst that $300,000. I think maybe that may be a good idea.
Well, yeah, you have to abolish the individual income tax. It was never supposed to happen because the state can refuse money to the federal government for unfunded mandates, unconstitutional laws, and everything else a lot more easily than the population of individuals, which is why they tax people individually as opposed to having a apportion with the states. But that's the first thing you want to go back to. That would provide a huge amount of economic freedom and power back to the states, as would having the senators in Congress also appointed by the state legislatures. Anyway, let's get your report, Derek, like I say. We'll be out of half
last
hour. Okay, last comment.
If people wanted it fair and easy, have a flat tax.
So, and have a flat sales tax so so we talked about this a little bit before when I was talking inflation before you came on. Yeah. A flat sales tax, once you abolish the income tax, a flat sales tax allows you to determine your tax by how much you purchase. So the more you save, yeah, the lower your tax. And that would be the best system of all. But you've got to abolish
absolutely
the income tax.
Yep,
yeah, income tax, you're going to get both.
Definitely,
you don't want both.
They would definitely incentivize,
yeah,
more safe. But okay, well, let me read this report here, and we'll let the rest of the time on questions.
Okay.
All right. Good morning. This is Derek Park of Ever Jones bringing you the daily financial market report. Markets reverse course and move sharply lower today as the Federal Reserve officials commented on moving rates higher at a rapid pace up from the tightened cycle. Fed Chair Jerome Powell noted that a half a percent rate hike is on the table for May, and markets now pricing in a 97% chance of this move. Yields climb higher today with the U.S. 10-year yield now at 2.9%. Meanwhile, technology and growth sectors underperform with the NASDAQ down over 2%. The energy sector also fell at 3% today, even as crude oil prices moved higher. The VIX, or Volatility Index, also moved higher up today, nearly 14%, up 23 levels, and underscoring the risk-off sentiment in markets. The U.S. equities closed lower with the Dow Jones down 368 points, or 1.05%, to 34,793. The NASDAQ closed down 278 points, or 2.07%, to 13,175, and the S&P 500 closed down 66 points, or 1.5%, to 43.94. Again, in the bond market, the 10-year Treasury yields are trading at 2.89%, higher by 0.05. In the commodity markets, the price of crude oil was up $1.52, or 1.49%, to 103.71, and the spot price of gold was down $2, or 0.12, to 19.53 and 30 cents. This is Derek Park of Ever Jones, member SIPC. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
Are you able to look up older financial reports? Could you look up one from, say, 2 years ago during the Trump administration, just as a comparison? I think it'd be fascinating. You know, here's the report today, and here's what it was, you know, back when we had a legal, well, you can't say it, but I can, you know, a legal administration, or just what was it that would have been 2 years ago would be April 22nd, 2020. No, that wouldn't be good because we're in COVID. 3 years ago. Can you find a three-year-old Edward Jones daily market report just as a snapshot? Is that possible?
I'm looking to see if they go back. Hold on just a second.
Okay. I think it'd be fascinating.
Like, no.
This is live radio. We do stuff like this.
If they do, it's gonna be buried.
Okay.
I'd have to go. Yeah. So I don't see any easy access point to see anything like that. I'd have to dig.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, and I think you're off next week anyway. So when you come back, I think it'd be fascinating just to get a little snapshot. You know, price of oil. What did you give the price? I don't think you got the price of oil or gold, did we? Or did that already?
I did. Yeah,
this one.
The price of oil is $103 a barrel, and gold is $19.25 per ounce.
Okay. So we did get that. Okay. So you go back 3 years, the price of oil was like $42 a barrel, and gold was, I think gold was higher. I think it was in the 2000s, but that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's the tightened cycle? You mentioned something like that with interest rates. I don't think I've heard that term before.
Yeah, a tightening cycle is raising interest rates. So they're just basically saying, hey, they're raising the Fed funds rate, which the interest rates are also going to go up. I mean, there's home mortgages have already hit 5%. I think the Fed has only raised the rate 0.25%. Typically, when the Fed raises the rate 0.25%, you know, your mortgage rates and things like that might move about 0.5%, you know. So keep this in mind. The Fed has only raised the rate 0.25%. Four months ago, mortgage rates were around 3.5%. We're at 5% right now. So I think what's happening is the banks are getting a little bit ahead and getting a little bit greedy, we're just going to go ahead and start spiking rates. I think it's disgusting that it's happening, to be honest, but unfortunately, you know, you, if you don't need to refinance, you don't have to. Unfortunately, if you're buying a house, you are where you are.
Yeah, the price of housing is going up around here because we have so many people moving to Florida. So now the prime rate, that's the one that people understand. So so when the Feds raise the rate, they're talking about the prime rate, which is the rate that the Fed charges banks, the cost of their money. The banks and the credit card companies then, as you say, you know, add on top of that different rates. What are credit cards doing these days?
So the credit cards also raise the rate. So the prime rate in credit cards has gone from average of 13.99 or 14.99 up to 16.99. So credit cards have also raised.
That's above the prime rate, or is that including the prime rate?
That's including the prime rate.
Okay.
Yeah. So credit cards typically, you know, even though the Fed's raising the Fed funds rate, I mean, for people with good credit, they're going to keep you at an interest rate that's probably under 20%. And I mean, 20% is even high, you know what I mean?
Well, that's extortion. Let's get real. That's extortion, 20%.
It is. I mean, you know, so like even, I mean, you know, using me for an example, I mean, I've got pristine credit, but, and ones I do the hotel cards because I like getting the points and stuff from them. My interest rate in one of them is 18.99%. So, I mean, you know, even though I've got great credit, they give you great incentive and they incentivize you to not leave money on the card.
Yeah. 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 And that's the big thing. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you can spend a fortune on credit cards as long as you pay it off. And that way you won't have any interest. There was a time, I think back, go ahead. Yeah. Derek, you're going to say something?
Yeah. I was just saying, yeah, that's it. I mean, don't leave a lot of money sitting on the card. If you do, you pay the interest on it. I mean, it's, used cards, mm-hmm. is to the best of your ability. And, that's what they're for.
Yeah. Now, the reason I want to bring credit cards is because there was a time I remember back in the 70s, and this was big for aviation, for people that had huge credit card charges and pilots and things, you know, fuel, stuff like that. Credit card interest was deductible on your taxes. Do you remember those days, or did you hear about those days? You're, you know, a little younger than me.
No, I didn't. I didn't at all.
Okay. How would that affect the economy, do you think, if credit card interest was deductible, like mortgage interest is deductible?
I mean, if people were allowed to offset their interest, I mean, the amount of debt, there'd probably be a lot less taxes from what I've seen.
Go ahead, Bianca. You remember those days, right, back in the 70s?
You mean to tell me you didn't experience the luxury of being able to deduct your credit card interest, the luxury to be able to take all your grocery receipts and spending receipts and individually add up the tax that showed on those receipts, which would push your amount of deductions in that category about 50%, 75% higher than what the federal table said. You don't remember that?
I vaguely do. I used to be in a portion where I could itemize where the standard deduction, I want to say it was around 14,000, if I'm not mistaken. So I could itemize and reduce my tax rate. Obviously the standard deduction now is so high, there's no way.
Well, that's also got the exemption as well, so they've combined those things. Well, I have one more thing to bring into the mix. I'm going to bring Chappie on and see if he has some questions and things. Chappie, do you have time beyond 15 minutes if you want to stay a little bit longer? Do you have some extra time this morning, or do you have to go in a quick time?
I got maybe about 5 minutes, and then I got to go.
Oh, Derek, that's okay. I was seeing Chappie. All right. So let's chat. Just hang on for a little bit. You're live. See if you have a question on this too. But the other thing I wanted to raise is one of the bills we have at Action Radio is to get rid of the withholding tax during the time that you're earning your standard deduction. So I originally did it in 2019 when when Trump raised the deduction to $12,000. So then it's indexed to whatever the standard deduction is. I forgot what it's going to be this year, 13.5 or whatever it's going to be. But the point is, if people did not have any money withheld from their income such that they had to file to get it back a year later, they got it up front by a year, they wouldn't lose their, quote, refund because they'd be getting it now because that money wouldn't be taxed. So the people's income wouldn't change in terms of, you know, the refund, but they'd have their money a year earlier. So for the economy, it'd be a huge effect. Of course, for the government, it would be a huge effect, too, because they wouldn't have the use of that money. So I wonder if Edward Jones would support that. I guess, I don't know. I wish they would. I don't think they get political. But if we had a situation where nobody had any withholding of their income until they'd reached their standard deduction, of course, they wouldn't get a refund, but it wouldn't matter because they're getting the money this year anyway as opposed to next year.
Right.
So you're getting this year's money up front by not being taxed as opposed to getting it a refund next year on money that was taxed or withheld.
Well, I mean, it briefs well. I mean, I like it. But, yeah, the company would never get behind anything like that. I mean, they try to stay very apolitical.
Well, if you know some business folks or groups or companies or, you know, I dare say Heritage, Cato, and Hoover, you know, the people that should be behind something like this, but they don't talk to me as much as I think they should. But you can tell me off air. If you have any directions I can go, because that's a bill I think would radically change the economy. And if I could ever talk to Donald Trump directly, I guarantee he would immediately, he would love that bill. So that's part of our plan to work on. Chappie, do you have any questions for Derek, economic stuff? So we're talking about small corporations, because you got a small corporation. Chappie? I know you're there. You're live.
Oh, sorry about
Turn
that.
Turn your phone on.
No, sorry, I had
that's
one.
Okay.
Yeah, I had
live radio.
Yeah, no, I'm just listening, taking all in too, because I just did my business taxes, and what a pain in the butt that was.
Are there good business tax computer programs or how? Because I've got FreeTax USA, which is great. I've never used TurboTax, and you know, I heard so many bad things. What do small business people do? Do you have like a recommendation or an idea or the best, you know, computer thing for a small business that you've seen, Derek? Or can you not make a recommendation?
You know, typically when I, for small businesses, I mean, yeah, I do recommend TurboTax. I used to use TurboTax myself and it was pretty easy. It was very user-friendly. You could import things if you have investments. I mean, you could log on there and it would just do all the work for you. The problem with it is if you need to get into specifics or do certain things, it did have some limitations and it does that on purpose to make sure you're gated and make sure you do exactly what you're supposed to do. So typically when it comes to businesses, you know, there are unique things that businesses can do, and this gets into tax things that I'm not aware of. So I normally refer people to a CPA, you know, just to, especially the CPA, they have that certification for a reason. And if there's some type of liability, they would never put their stamp on it and expose themselves to that type of, you know, an audit or anything like that. So typically a CPA is going to look out for you, and themselves. So,
well, that's which raises my question that I've had for a long time. I've always done my own taxes because I figure I will be more aggressive with my deductions. I read the instructions, you know, I do what they say I can do, but if it's a choice of taking a deduction or not, I'm probably going to take it. And if the IRS has a problem, from what I've heard, they'll say, Greg, we're disallowing this deduction, you know, pay whatever. So I'll be like, okay. No problem, you know, if it comes to a dispute on that. But a CPA who has a license to guard, they may be more conservative in their deductions as opposed to more aggressive that I'd want to be, because I want to maximize the money that I'm keeping and minimize the amount that I'm paying, which is perfectly legal. The IRS says you can do that. Okay, so it's not like I'm giving you any secrets. Go ahead.
Yeah, if your taxes are pretty consistent every year, you know, ideally when you sit down with a CPA, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to find your happy place, you know, without getting yourself into some kind of liability, and then dealing with the tax changes every year. You know, I mean, so for an example, let me use me. I mean, actually, you know, to be quite honest, I mean, Donald Trump's tax cuts and stuff helped a lot of small businesses and helped a lot of, you know, a lot of people. If you made less than roughly $75,000 a year, you actually did really well under his tax stuff. Now, if you're somebody like me who's kind of a hybrid business owner, man, I took it in the shorts, you know, so it's basically because I'm a hybrid, because I am a W-2 employee, but I'm also a business owner because I have business expenses and things like that. I was no longer allowed to write off my business expenses because I'm a W-2 employee. So
wait a minute, don't you get reimbursed employee expenses? Don't you get those?
I do, okay, but there has to be a certain way, like, you know, like you have to have money deducted out of your pay that creates a business expense that you don't pay taxes on, and it has to be a certain way, but there's a cap on it because I'm a W-2 employee. So, you know, it basically gated me to lose about, I'm gonna ballpark by first year, about $7,000 in tax liability that I
wow.
took it on the chin. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not upset about that. I mean, I understand why it happened. And I'm actually really happy to see other people, you know, people that are lower income and having to survive and make ends meet, get those tax breaks. You know, I mean, I'm not upset about that. I'm not a hater. You know, I mean, I get it. You know, I mean, you know, the vast majority of people, what really made me upset about that was, you know, he made the tax cut and people are like, oh, he's giving tax benefits to all his buddies. But really the best benefit was for people that made $70,000. And I mean, I actually got in arguments with people over this. I'm like, they're like, well, I didn't see any tax breaks. I said, show me your taxes. Show it to me. You know what I mean? Like I'll give you $100 if you show it to me. And nobody ever would do it because they didn't want to be proven wrong. They'll die on the hill. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I mean, it's kind of sickening, but you know, really, you know, tax laws are going to change. They're going to ebb and flow. A CPA's job really is to kind of keep you out of trouble. Now, when you do your own, if you decide to get a little bit outside of the limit, that's what triggers an audit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And most of the time, I'll tell you about 90% of the time, the IRS is not even going to send an auditor to you. They're just going to tell you what you did wrong in an email nowadays, or even a letter, and just be like, boom, here's your refund. Deal with it. You know, or here's what you owe us. Deal with it. And then it's your job to prove them wrong.
Yeah. You know, another thing, too, that you get in an argument with people. Well, I didn't get back as much as I did last year. Well, damn, fool, you paid less every pay period because of Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, I got back less. I kept more money. Yeah, that's hard to understand for some people. Very good point there, Mr. Pianchi.
Yep. Oh, well, I'll have the same thing, too, if this withholding goes through and people don't have – they'll have all kinds of extra money because it's not being withheld. Then they'll wonder where the refund is. I was like, well, you got it last year. And they're going to be all
so good at math,
you know,
are we?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to step on traffic time too much, but
no,
so Derek,
you're fine. You can keep going because this is great stuff for a small business.
Okay, in that case,
so,
yeah.
I think, like, personally, I'm not aggressive enough on my write-offs because I'm trying to avoid an audit. But as far as the TurboTax, I do use that because I use it with my QuickBooks. They all tie in together, like you said, and then anything else I take to a CPA. But yeah, it's amazing, you know, the ebbs and flows of, you know, when I first started my business compared to now, and, you know, doing the write-offs and everything and what's acceptable and not acceptable. It's frustrating sometimes just the way the economy is going and the supply
they don't
chain.
Tell you
everything
else.
Greg, I got to step
tell you
out.
Okay. Let's
I got to step
your,
out. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Yep. All right. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay. Sounds good.
Be careful, Derek.
Bye-bye. Yep,
that was Derek Park Jones. He's in Pace, Florida, and I forgot his phone number, but he said it earlier in the show, so get the podcast.
Yeah, the point I wanted to make with Derek is that, and Chappie, you exactly said what the problem is, that people are afraid of an audit because they don't know what triggers an audit, and the IRS doesn't tell you. You know, so they leave it to you to give more money than you would give ordinarily. I mean, like I say, all you have to do is follow the instructions. That's what I do, and if it says I can take a deduction, I do. You know, but if it's questionable, chances are I'm going to be a little more aggressive with it up until I think what the point is that they say I can do, you know, as opposed to people that cheat. The cheaters are going to get caught. But if you can be aggressive, and again, what Derek said actually happened to me years and years ago, this is back when I was living in Massachusetts. So it's my early 20s. Massachusetts had some bizarre thing that they said that I didn't pay. And I said, okay, prove it to me. And they couldn't. And I said, well, give me my old tax return. Well, they couldn't do that either, right? This is back when everything was paper. And I said, all right, well, then if you can't prove it and you can't show me what it is, I'm not going to pay it. Well, then they told the IRS, and the IRS sends me a notice. Massachusetts says that you owe them, you know, for whatever, and it wasn't a big deal. I said, okay, well, send me my tax return. Well, we don't have it. Massachusetts does. Okay, well, then make them send it. Well, they didn't. This went on for like a year, you know. But what happened was the IRS eventually took you know, a couple hundred bucks out of my refund. It wasn't a big deal, but they took it out of my refund, and I'm not going to go challenge that. I mean, wait, go to the IRS and say, wait a minute, you know, you don't have my taxes, my return, you're taking the money anyway, screw it. You know, and that's what I think most people do. But that's the only time. But the worst thing that happens is if they say you owe something, you just pay what they say you owe. If you make a mistake on your taxes or you do the math wrong or something like that, it's really not a big deal. An audit for those that like willfully deceive the IRS and hide income and park it in the Cayman Islands and, you know, put the wrong numbers down, or people whose math sucks. But I think people are so afraid of the IRS, they're actually afraid to take deductions that they really can get. And if I remember, the figure's around $3,000. People pay on average $3,000 more per year than they actually owe, simply because they're afraid to take deductions that they are fully and legally entitled to. And that's the problem. The IRS is like, hey, great, we don't care. Fear works. More money for them.
Well, I mean,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, sir.
I made sure, you know, because, you know, I keep mine pretty organized per month, you know, all of my business expenses and then, you know, break it down into a spreadsheet and all that and make sure, you know, I try to take max out, you know, even all what you can for office stuff and stuff like that. But sometimes it seems like it doesn't get you anywhere. But I guess the best advice for everybody is definitely just keep organized, because I think that scares the IRS the most. Like, okay, come, here's my stuff. And then
they organize.
But
follow the rules. And, you know, go up to the rules. You know, what's the rule from what's the movie The Firm? Remember when Gene Hackman says, I don't care about audit, just to pay anything, whatever it is. I don't care, you know, how far you've been, just don't break them. You know, so I'm thinking, okay, well, I don't know how far that is, but I'm, you know, I'll do what I think, you know, makes sense. But I think people are unnecessarily timid and pay far more than they have to. But I think with the computer stuff, it actually makes it a lot easier because, you know, the computer's telling you what you can and can't do. Yeah, go ahead.
And then I think stuff like TurboTax stuff, I think, uses that fear also, because, you know, there's always like, hey, to upgrade more, pay additional $49.99, and we'll, you know, they give you that audit protection. And I think people will pay that because, you know, they're kind of fearing, oh, look, I'll get protected, and they'll take it on, so people will just pay that. And I'm guilty of it. I've done that before, you know, because you're always afraid of
but
that.
I'm thinking,
audit.
Why I pay for audit protection? Aren't they doing it right the first time? Is that the whole point of using their service?
You know,
exactly.
One of the most ridiculous things I experienced is I overpaid a payroll tax. You know, I was required to pay the first when I began. I paid my payroll tax a week later. Then as it grew, I had to pay them the next day. I overpaid the payroll tax, and they penalized. Could you believe that?
Oh, I can believe anything when it comes to the IRS, but yeah. Hey, listen, one of the biggest scandals out there, and we need to talk about this too. I did it before. Katie Grimes and Reagan Babe, I've forgotten her name, but we talked about the ITIN number. And this is the one that the IRS uses to take tax money from illegal aliens that have no right to be here. Well, one of the benefits of being here illegally is that you can't pay taxes. You can't, because paying taxes gets you the necessary, you know, taxes. Actually, paying taxes is not necessarily a right of citizenship, but it really is. It's in the province of citizenship, and lawful immigrants and I guess folks on visas may have to do it as well. But illegal aliens can't pay taxes, and the reason is because you can't have them buy their way into staying here. But the IRS figures, you know, if they're here anyway, let's take their money. And they can't do that. So we really need to do away with that whole ITIN thing. Anyway, let's get a quick comment on that, and then let's go to Chappy stuff. We'll find out what's happening in the competitions. Anybody have a comment? Because, Pianchi, you know about the ITIN number.
Yes, I actually do. You got illegals. They get home mortgages and credit cards using their ITIN number.
They get child care tax credits even if they don't earn any money. So they can work off the books, they can work illegally under the table, and still claim the child tax care credit under the ITIN number. And they're certainly not entitled to that.
They're more or less double dipping. They're getting the advantages of all the tax write-offs without having to, you know, do all
without
the right
paying
things.
The kids get to go to, their kids get to go to your school. They get to take advantage of in-state tuition. Even they come from another country. But if you come from Illinois and go to the University of Texas, you got to pay out-state tuition.
Out-state.
And we got to
not forget about what drives up our medical premiums and stuff like that. Because, you know, if an illegal doesn't have insurance, goes to the hospital, somebody's got to pick up those medical bills. So then, of course, all of us who pay taxes and everybody and our insurance premiums. We get, they just tag that onto us. So it's a never, it's wrong. It's just.
Well, you know, I would bill their nation of citizenship. In fact, that's something I'm going to make a little note to myself here. You know, illegal aliens bill their country of citizenship. That's something that Trump would do. The social.
You're absolutely right. We should do that. And the sad thing is that you are giving these countries where they come from U.S. aid. Trump cut that tremendously when he became president. He said, we're giving you money to address the problems that your people are fleeing here from. It doesn't make sense. So he cut the aid.
Yep, I'm just writing some stuff down. Chappie, why don't you give us what's going on in competitive world and any new gun tech? I was just thinking about that. We haven't had any new guns lately, so I don't know if happening in that world. Yeah,
coming out.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of companies are kind of sticking with what, instead of mass producing a bunch of stuff that's in their arsenal, they're kind of seeing what's really been selling. For instance, CZ out of Czech Republic, they're big. Pistol right now is the CZ Shadow 2 and this other CZ. So they're producing more of that than they are their rifles. I've had customers that have been waiting on this 22 rifle that's really big in like the precision world. It's coming. One, they're kind of starting to phase out, but CZ's kind of focused more of their efforts on making CZ Shadow 2s and getting it out to the public. I just got one. And
what is it? What is it exactly?
I got the
CZ. What's the Shadow 2? What is it? What
Shadow
is it?
2 carry optics. So I'm switching from Glock for my competition carry optics pistol to a CZ Shadow 2. Night and day difference. I love Glock. Don't get me wrong. You know, Glock armor. Glocks are, to me, are, you know, out of the box. They're the most reliable self-defense firearms. But once it comes to competition shooting and in air quotes, racing. They're kind of like Honda Civics. You can only do so much to it before, you know, it's still a Honda Civic.
Yes, your Honda Civic starts, but your Ferrari will get you there.
That's what people call Glocks, you know, the Hondas of the gun world because they're reliable and they last. But so, because you can only add so much weight and everything in the balance and everything. So I hopped on to the CZ Shadow 2 train like everybody else, in which everybody, you know, called CZ's the gourmet coffee of pistols. And it's I got it on a Thursday, zeroed it on a Friday, and shot a match on Saturday. Night and day difference. I don't even have 500 rounds on the thing yet, and it's but it's a pack driver, so far I'm getting used to it. I didn't even upgrade any of the springs or anything. It's amazing pistol, so I love it so far. The only thing I might change out is the grip, but more.
See, that's a huge question, too. The engineers spend millions of dollars making a really good gun, and then for some reason, gun owners feel this need to rip out half the parts, you know, put in aftermarket that may or may not work. Now, grips, I understand, because everybody's hand is different.
Yeah.
So I understand tailoring grips, and some guns have adjustable grips and things like that. But this idea that you have to, I mean, my guns work because I leave alone. You know, the grips are the only thing I change. Or maybe, and the optics, I'll do fiber optics, I'll do some other things.
Yeah.
But other than that, the internal workings, I figure the engineers have already done that job for me. I don't have to pay for it again. I already bought the gun.
The two things definitely on a Glock, though, which everybody will tell you, is definitely trigger. Then, like you said, the sight, fiber optics. And maybe I would also recommend, depending on the load that you're shooting and all that, recoil spring and stuff like that. But once you start messing with that, that's where you see, like you mentioned, everybody starts ripping out the guts and they're wondering why they're having misfeeds or light primer strikes. It's like, well, you're changing up, you know. It's like you mentioned, the engineers put a lot of time and money into it to prevent those things, and then everybody kind of goes backwards and they're wondering why their gun's not working. So
build a custom one, you know, go to Chappie and have a custom one. Like I was talking earlier with Shirley Watchell, the distance from my shoulder to eyes is big, you know, long neck, you know, long head, you know, too much gray matter that I'm not using, you know, that kind of stuff. So ergonomically, I have real trouble with rifles. And so if I was ever going to compete, you know, when it comes to prone shooting, I can't do it. I can't line up directly behind the rifle and put my eye and shoulder and body in a place that's going to work. I'm always at an angle, and it's weird. So for me, I'm going to need something, you know, custom something. I'm going to, you know, we're going to do some measurement stuff and figure it out. But those are things that's where you need the custom work. But in terms of the actual internal workings, no, I'm not going to mess with them. You know, yeah. I'm not going to change the bolt on my rifle. It works fine. Yeah. And it's designed to.
Yeah, other things you can, you know, polish it up smoother. But yeah, or if you're doing all that, by the time you do everything, you should have just went with a full custom gun. But
exactly.
The only thing I'm getting used to. So in USPSA for carry optics, you have to start hammer down, but you got the safety off. So that first double action pull is a little different going from a striker fired Glock. But then the double action though after each fire after that on the CZ. Is super light for a factory. But so that's the only thing I'm still getting used to is that first double action pull, but it's still not that bad. And then, you know, the manual safety.
Do you have a hammer that you can turn back, or is that not done in competition?
So it's not. So it has to start, again, hammer down. I mean, you could pull. You're wasting time, though. So, and then you're increasing your chance of discharge. So
yeah.
That's the only thing really new gun tech. I haven't really seen anything really out there dropping. I've seen some reports, you know, the Army and the Air Force are testing some firearms to replace the M4 to try to kind of like how they did with the SIG with the pistol, you know, to kind of have one that can adapt to everybody. They're going with SIG.
What's an
again,
M4?
The Army. I know the Army
what's,
is. So the
what's
M4
an M4
is
for those that don't know?
The military version of the AR-15, short 14.5-inch barrel and adjustable buttstock. So they're trying to, again, look for something that can be like an all-around, one-all-be-all rifle where they can change out the barrel, make it a sniper rifle, change out the barrel to make it a patrol rifle, stuff like that. So that's in the testing phase. The Air Force is also looking at some new rifles and stuff. Personally, I think everything's still just going to go back to the M4, the AR-15 platform. I think, Eugene Stoner had it right years ago, and it's still ticking. So,
there have been very few real revolutions in guns. You look at, I think, Mauser, you know, in the late 1800s with the claw extractor, the bolt-action rifle. You know, that was a revolution. Everybody started making Mauser rifles. I think our Springfields. And the British Enfield, the original Enfields, and our own Enfield was a, you know, basically a Mauser bolt action.
Yeah, yeah.
And the next big revolution would have been probably the Garand, the World War II rifle that we had with the eight-round clips, that actually were clips. And I guess the last one we've really had, this was in the 60s, Eugene Stoner, who created the AR. And that's not for automatic rifle, folks. That's Armalite. That was the company
Armalite.
He worked for.
Armalite rifle.
Yeah.
And don't forget
but
that
really,
the 1911, too. The 1911.
Yeah, that's been for handguns, yeah. But really, we haven't had a revolution since, in rifles, since the AR-15.
No.
Or the M16, have we?
Nope. No. Just a little bit, you know, customization here and there, but nothing extreme that, you know, totally replaced. You know, because the M16 replaced the M14, which was two different platforms. You know, M14 was a heavier wood stock.
Well, it's like a Garand. It was a 308 Garand with a detachable magazine. Yeah. How about the AK-47? Would that be a revolution unto itself? Because that hasn't changed much either.
That hasn't changed much either. You have, it's a big deal for Russia. I mean, and that's probably one of the most replicated rifle out of different manufacturers in the world. You know, because there's so many different variations. You got the Chinese AKs and, you know, all these other countries. But, there's nothing, you know. Like I said, Eugene Stoner was ahead of his time, you know, even making that with plastic back then. It was like a space age thing. And it's still doing the test of time, so. But as far as tech, I haven't seen anything big coming out. You know, of course, SHOT Show's over, so a lot of companies aren't dropping their products until next January. So, it seems like some things are going back, you know, taking a while before anything comes back, because I think the whole supply chain is keeping everything from, happening right now.
How about ammo?
We're still waiting.
Are we COVID recovered?
We're still not COVID recovered. We're seeing the influx. Like I said, I know I've been working with some people to import ammo and stuff in with my import license. But primers are still the big issue, and there's also – so there's a letter that came down saying from Federal and CCI, which is owned by This Outdoor, saying that prices are due to increase and they won't expect to sell primers to the civilian market until maybe August, September. So we don't know if that's true. That would be great if they are, but this is like the second time they sent a letter since the whole COVID thing saying prices are going up. We got manufacturers, we got a letter last year in May saying, hey, expect prices to increase.
Right.
And of course, makes our prices increase to the customer. So it just, you know, and of course, they're citing everything from supplies, supply chain, not enough employees, and stuff like that. So,
hopefully
we're starting to see, you know, light at the end of the tunnel with all this. It's just, I don't see prices going down anytime soon with the way the economy is. So, hopefully it gets better. It's better than what it was, you know, a year and a half ago, at least, as far as availability. But hopefully we'll get through it. You know, we dealt with this during the Obama administration, and then what happened, we had the reverse when President Trump became in office. It was the Trump slump. You know, a lot of companies weren't making as much money then, supposedly, because everybody felt safe.
Yeah, we had time. We didn't have to run out and buy everything we wanted. Well, and the thing is, too, you know, the idea of buying more guns, I think probably the thing is to have a few guns and buy more ammo. You can do more practice.
Yeah.
Do you think people buy too many guns and not enough ammo?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. I will say, though, I think even after this administration gets out of office, I think we've all learned our lesson during the Trump slump. Like, hey, when it's there, I think a lot more people are going to start stocking up when the times are good versus before. Because I think everybody's going to think, hey, it's just a matter of time before we have a whole other Biden situation or a whole other COVID situation. So I think if I was an investor, I would definitely be invested in the ammo market now, because I think a lot more people are going to start being ahead of the game just in case something happens again.
Right.
Because that scared a lot of people. It scared a lot of people, like, especially in the competition world, not, you know, kind of managing your matches for the whole year where you can and can't compete because of your ammo supply. So,
that's wild.
Speaking of matches.
Yeah, how's competition going? What's happening? What we got?
So the big match starting next week, starting on Wednesday through next weekend, is the World Speed Shooting Championship in Talladega. That's where Gatlin Johnson and Tyron, that we've interviewed, will be at.
Uh-huh.
This is the World Speed event. It's a level 4, the highest level match you can get. I'm shooting it Wednesday, so I won't be there with the big dogs. Gatlin and them will be shooting. So probably a week or two after their match, I'd like to do an interview with them to talk about the pluses, the minuses of the match, what they thought about it, how it was managed and everything. But so this will be the big one, and I'll try to take some video, maybe send it to you so we can put it on the website and stuff like that. But this is my first time shooting this match, so I'm pretty excited. And I'm shooting a pistol.
So what are your events? What are you going to be shooting?
I'm going to be shooting the pistol caliber carbine, PCC, so basically a 9mm AR-15 platform. So,
okay.
Try to see how fast that goes. So, Gatlin, he's shooting pretty much every division other than revolver. So he's going to be up there all weekend shooting a lot. So, and there's 10, of course, there's 10 stages, or no, 8. There's 8 stages total. So it's a lot of shooting. So it's going to be a good time. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing the vendors. So from there, I'll see, you know, from the vendors what stuff maybe they'll have coming out and what I can possibly demo and give it a little report on that as well.
Yeah. I'm curious why Czechoslovakia became such a powerhouse in gun world, being an Eastern European country, being under communism for so many years, and now they're one of the top producers of ammo and firearms.
Yep. So that's funny you mention that. So in the competition world here in the States, the 2011 platform here is pretty popular, which is a double stack 1911 in 9mm or 30.
Okay.
And that's what you'll mainly see here. Of course, then you'll see the CZs are pretty popular here. But in Europe and pretty much everywhere else, definitely Europe and then Eastern Europe, though, the CZ is the popular gun over there because of, I think, of just availability. Mm-hmm. But that's their go-to over there for their competition pistol. But yeah, Czechoslovakia definitely came like the powerhouse of firearms over there, like you said, with ammo and the CZ firearm and stuff like that. So, and you still, you know, you still got your others, though. You have, you know, Beretta and all that other stuff. But if you're seeing for competition, you see a lot of CZs over there as far as IPSC, the international shooting competition. So, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see this at, you know, the world. And there'll be people from around the world at this match. So it's going to be pretty interesting.
Then
May 7th at Escambia mm-hmm. River Gun Club will be our May USPSA match, and we're trying to do themes every month with our matches to kind of make it like IPSC-ish like. So it'll be May the 4th match be with you. So all our stages.
Well,
will be
I told
named
you
after,
I can do a voiceover for you guys. You know, I can do my Yoda if you want to do May the 4th. You know, and
this is Yoda for Escambia River Gun Club. Where the force will be with you. Shoot well, young Padawans. Be Jedi one day.
I mean, I could do that.
No, yeah, that'd be awesome. Well, we were hoping you'd
so
come
send
out
them the podcast.
It's
on the podcast now. Send that over to them. You know, mark it at 8:32, so 32 minutes past in the third hour, if they want to hear my Yoda.
So, yeah, we're hoping you come out. But, yeah, we're going to, you know, we're going to offer, you know, people to kind of come out and they want to dress up in their favorite Star Wars character. And then we have prizes at the end for the top shooter. And that's something people are going to have to see at the match. We're doing something really special for the winners. So,
wow.
And that's something we're doing every match, though, is we're definitely giving back to the competitors and doing awards. Some clubs do it, you know, during a major match, but we're doing it every match. That's going to be our go-to for everybody. So. That's basically all I have this week. But yeah, I definitely appreciate the show this week with the business taxes and stuff like that, because that's always very interesting.
That was unplanned. That just happened. Most of the good things that happen on this completely by accident. I don't plan what to discuss with all the reporters that call in, because I just figure you guys will have something. And chances are we're going to go off on a tangent anyway. Yesterday we spent 3 hours on the unmasking overturn. And so the mask mandate overturned. So if you want to learn everything you probably want to know ever about government procedures, which are the ones that go right, which are the ones that go wrong, you know, we spent, Jonathan and I and Pianchi was there, we spent 3 hours going over this entire case. So that, I don't think I'll ever do that again. It was exhausting, but it was rewarding because we actually put it all in. And I was hoping we could do the 3 hours, but I had no idea how it was going to work out. So the experiments on the show are like a regular thing. And before you go, I want to make sure that, if Pianchi had a question, he could ask it to you. Pianchi, do you got a question for Chappie?
Well, I was going to tell Chappie the night before his meet, put your ammunition in the freezer.
Chappie?
You know, the things I say, they even mystify me sometimes.
Okay, so, all right. Now, I know there's a reason for this. Otherwise, you wouldn't have said it. Why? Why do you put your ammo in the freezer?
So he can be a dead cold shot.
Or do you put your gun there too, so it has to be prized from your cold dead fingers? Actually, now let's think about this. Let's take this absurd statement of Pianchi's and see if we can make some logic out of it. If you shoot in a colder environment, your ballistics are different than a hotter environment. The air is colder, the powder is colder. The primer is colder. The case is colder, so it's smaller. The bullet's going to be constricted and smaller because cold things are small. So has anybody ever done this? you want to hear a weird question, Chappie? Has anybody actually done that, shot cold, literally cold ammunition, as opposed to – or like the people that serve in the polar regions? You know, how do they – do they have to keep their ammo warm so that it works? How does the temperature affect you know, the ammo and matches. I mean, no change to the ballistics. Hotter ammo literally is hotter. You know, higher temperatures, higher metal temperatures, higher powder burn, higher powder burning temperatures. It's an interesting idea.
That, I mean, I know definitely in the military, whenever they start firing or testing a weapon before purchase, they go through that from extreme cold to heat. And then also you have to think about, too, the type of oil that is used in a firearm. The thicker the oil, you know, more stuff for summertime you definitely don't want to use in the winter because it's going to kind of gum up a little bit more because it's colder. So that affects it as well. But yeah, it affects everything, like you said too, because I know, shooting in humidity versus the cold or dry air, yeah, everything, that all plays a big difference. So.
Yeah, hot air is less dense too. That makes a difference. You're going to be shooting further, aren't you? There's more drag in cold air because the air is denser and more concentrated?
It's correct.
Yeah. Mm. So. See what you start, Bianchi? I'll take the
Well, that's time. What you can expect on Action Network.
Radio, yeah. Action Radio. So. Jeez, we're going to plug us, get it right.
Action Radio.
Greg, that's all I got. I got to go, but I will definitely keep up with you about – I'll probably let you know how – send some pics next week from Talladega to show the range and everything and keep you guys posted.
Love it. Yeah, thank you. Well, I put some Escambia stuff for you guys, doing the gun range out there too. So thank you very much. Have a wonderful competition, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Javi. Bianca, it's you and me. As we close out another week here on Action Radio, I have more stories, but I don't particularly need to get into them. I think we should just sort of chat a little bit. We've got about 23 minutes left. Anybody else wants to join us, 215-383-3832. You can join us by calling in. You can join us on the live chat, which no one's taking advantage of today. You can join us on the Skype line, internationally, anywhere in the world, which no one's taking advantage of also. So we always wait to call, and I apologize for not knowing that my show wasn't broadcasting for about probably 20 minutes during the first half hour. I'll make a note to that on the show notes so people on the podcast can skip through where we actually began the show again, and that's why I'm on cell phone. So, Bianchi, we started the week with the home office environment, and we ended up with the unmasking court case and business taxes today. It's been quite a week here. What do you think?
Well, especially the court case, because the thing we, on this, your radio program, you've been talking about this forever. Mm-hmm. And I remember how people used to call in and want to say it was stupid and that we must go by the professional and the science and all that, then you don't hear from them now. They gone. I mean, that's what it
well,
does.
Well, you actually banned one person because she was obnoxious and she sounded like a broken record, and I heard everything she said, and she was just lying. I give a reasoned, rational argument with facts and evidence, and she said, that's just your opinion. So that's not an argument. That's just that's a weasel word thing. I mean, I can say that about anything. I can say that about anything that comes out of any government department. That's just their opinion. It doesn't count. I can say that your science isn't real science, but unless you're refuting the facts, so I had no use for her. So she's not back. But we don't get liberal calls. We just don't. I don't know why. I mean, I really wish we had some. I'd love to be able to talk to these folks about that. But yesterday's show was really quite amazing in the fact that we spent 3 hours on one case. I guarantee you there isn't a program in this country, certainly, or probably anywhere in the world, that gave that kind of detail. But you think about what we covered. We covered administrative procedures. We covered all the different ways that courts do things, the things they can do, the things they can't do, the ways they fall astray, the government agencies that make up their own powers, the people, Brandon and the coup that if it's illegal to take office, it's illegal to do whatever else they seem to want to do. But just the arrogance of these government people that don't know the Constitution, don't know what they're supposed to do, or they do know, and they just want to do it anyway. I mean, that really was a fascinating look into so many aspects of government and everything that's wrong with government that's why I figured it was worth the time to cover that yesterday. So we did.
Well, it's just like we made mention. We was talking about the 1944 Public Health Services Act,
mm-hmm.
and the words that was used. Well, people have a tendency of taking the definition and how words are used today in 2022 and want to go back to the 1700s and apply that meaning today back then. Well, you guess can't do that. You need to get a dictionary that was used back that time to better explain the definition of that word to understand how it was being used as it applied to that law. It's a difference.
So we talked about that when we talked about a well-regulated militia. That doesn't mean a government-regulated militia. It means basically citizens in a citizen army that is every bit as well-equipped. So you can replace the word regulated with well-equipped as your standard infantry soldier, because your standard infantry soldier was called a regular. They weren't called infantry. They weren't called soldiers. So the it was the British regulars that marched up into Lexington and Concord on April 19th on what is now Patriots Day that nobody celebrated except us. You know, I had a whole thing. I read the ride, the Paul Revere's Ride by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. I read the whole thing. Play Little Stars and Stripes, play Little Fife and Drum. We had this fascinating show. I don't think anybody else did that. We did.
Well, you know, you run into a lot of people that's just ignorant. And matter of fact, they will pay others to make them more ignorant. Ignorer, if there's such a word. They go to lectures, and these lectures just pump them full of non-essential and unproven. I mean, it's just mess. And they pay for it. Then they want to come out and argue with you over what mm-hmm. they was taught that was not truthful, and they paid for it. It's a difference.
Remember Action Radio's axioms. I think that's what I'm going to call them. Assumptions is stronger than truth. And there was another one regarding, you know, people will hang on to their assumptions, you know, till their death. They will defend their assumptions far stronger than they'll defend facts, even when the facts are shown to them. Because assumptions
yes.
are what make people, what really drive people. If they assume that the government's telling the truth, then you can't persuade them otherwise. You just can't. If you make the claim that the whole purpose of government education is to indoctrinate people, to make them subservient to government, to make them cogs in the wheel, certain people know that, but most people don't. You know, they'll say, well, I went to a public school and I turned out okay. Well, how do you know? And what makes you think that I think you turned out okay? They never think about that.
Hey, absolutely. And to think of those that don't know that the federal government has no policing power.
That's right.
And
Go ahead.
I tell that to a lot of blacks. I say, why are you worried about who's representing you at a federal level? Well, it should be those that's representing you at a local level. They closer to you.
Yep. Well, that's one of my tax things. We get back on tax. Taxes are kind of fascinating in a way because I had a plan, a couple of different plans. One, we go back to apportionment. You know, the Constitution, most of the amendments to the Constitution are bad. I think the few good ones would be the 14th, maybe a couple of others. But most of them, you know, made the situation worse. The ones that took away the election of senators in the state legislatures was bad. The one that created the Federal Reserve was bad. The one that created the income tax was bad. I kind of wish we had the Equal Rights Amendment back in the 70s because the biggest beneficiaries now would be men, especially white men. If you have the equal protection of the laws, of course, you didn't need it because you already have it in the 14th Amendment. But if you had equal pay protection and things like that or equal, you know, protection, you know, men, especially in divorce trials, you know, if we had equality under the law instead of favoritism, most guys would be better off, and they never think about that, you know. So, you know, pro-choice. Well, if women have a choice, men have a choice. Men don't think about that either because they're stupid, you know. But there's so many things that people don't. They go by the assumptions, and it's like Republicans that will argue something, you know, using Democrat language. You know, when Democrats say, "Why do you need an assault weapon?" and the Republicans will say, "Well, I have my Second Amendment right to my assault weapon." Well, you idiot, you use the term assault weapon instead of freedom rifle. You've defeated your argument by using their terms. You can't do that. You know, the whole reason they want to silence debate on Twitter. They want to silence Twitter. They want to silence, you can't talk about the fraudulent election as being a coup. Well, why not? It was a fraudulent election, and it was a coup. But you have to be able to say that to get in people's minds that it was a fraudulent election, and it was a coup. We have the worst, third world, banana republic, you know, developing country, corrupt communist coup, a military takeover or a group takeover or something like that. I mean, what's the difference between Castro taking over Cuba and Brandon taking over, the United States, other than the amount of people who were killed when Castro took over Cuba? You know, they're both coups.
You're right.
Now, the policies are different. I'm not comparing Cuba to the United States in terms of policy. Obviously, it's more oppressive in Cuba. But the similarities, Castro came to power in a coup. Brandon came to power in a coup. They were both coups. They weren't duly elected. Hitler was, but that's another story. But Brandon was not elected. Anybody who has any intelligence knows that Brandon wasn't elected because you can't intellectually argue to me that Brandon was more popular than Donald Trump. You can't do it. There is no evidence. There is even anecdotal. You look at the rallies. Eight people in sitting in white circles for a Brandon rally, campaigning from the basement, versus tens of thousands of Trump rallies and tens of thousands more waiting to get in. You can't tell me intellectually that Brandon was more popular than Trump. Can't happen. It's an irrational argument. And yet, you know, people say, well, you can't talk about the election. There's no evidence. What do you mean there's no evidence? There's so much evidence. I can't begin to describe how much evidence there is, from the audits to the truckloads of affidavits to the videos to the many films coming out. There's so much evidence out there that this is a coup. It's staggering that nothing's been done. It hasn't been done because the geldings want Brandon over Trump. And that's the problem. So all these people that are waiting for the Republicans to do wonderful things in the fall, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that they're going to win in the House and the Senate, because Brandon's policies are so oppressive and so disgusting. Nobody in their right mind would have ever voted for them if they knew what they were. But the problem is that the geldings don't use power. They defer to the Democrat Marxists. So if the geldings are going to defer to the Marxists, what's the point of being in the gelding party, and what's the point of voting for them? I don't think there is.
Well, they're dragging Obama back out and dusting him off, pressing his shirt.
Well,
so they
that?
Must be worried.
So tell me why Obama is out of this, because there are no accidents in politics, right? So why is Obama back in the spotlight now? Why do you think?
For black voters. And also, they're still going after these states like Georgia.
Well, so you're saying black voters wouldn't vote for Brandon? I know Hispanic voters aren't going to vote for him.
I don't think that blacks, you know, you got some dynamics that's going there. One, you got some that's going to vote for Democrats under any circumstances, but then you got young people that's more educated and can see their situation. You know, the internet has provided ways to look, and you can compare your situation. You can analyze your situation. And I think you got a lot of young blacks that's wanting to become business people and so on and so on and so on, then they can look at the facts of what they have not achieved under this one particular party other than a lot of promises. I mean, just look at your schools. That data can't lie.
Yeah.
When you look at black immigrants that come here and how much better that they do, so is it the skin color?
So it's interesting that black immigrants don't come here to be victims, to be as American blacks pretend to be. You know, there's not one black immigrant that comes here saying, I want to be just like, I want to go to a housing project. You know, I want a substandard school system. I want to live in a city with a corrupt black administration of Democrats. You don't see that, at least as far as I know.
Well, you're absolutely right on that last point, because it used to be all this hoop and holler about we need people in office that look like us. Well, I mean, we can point out your cities. You can point out even the state of Illinois. Look at the number of blacks that's in higher echelon there. You got an attorney general, a second in command, attorney general. You got the secretary of state. You got the lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm.
You got the prosecutor of Cook County, the mayor of Chicago, police chief, Department of Health, and look at the situations that's going on there.
Yeah. I agree. In fact, I remember back when people were saying that back when Congress was mostly men, they said, if we just get women in office, things will be better. Women are more nurturing. Women talk more. They share. They can negotiate. You know, women are mothers. Women know how to, you know, handle kids, and women will be much better, you know, for Congress. We'll get better policies. We'll be a more humane, kinder, gentler nation, as Bush would say. And look at the women that are in office. Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Nancy Pelosi. What's her name? The Republican one, the vice president. What's her name? You know, Lynn, what's her name? Rhonda Daniels, Kamala Harris. Who heads up, Lynn, what's that?
The vice president?
Cheney. Lynn Cheney. No, Lynn Cheney. Yeah, come on. But you look at Harris, Lynn Cheney. You look at, you know, women in office. They haven't made it better. Some of the most corrupt, horrible people in office. Let's just take Nancy Pelosi and Kamala Harris. Are women. Did they make things better because they're women? No. Yeah.
But you look at some of the ridiculous things, like this Jackson. They look at her because of her skin color. See, you got some people out there that's overwhelmed by symbolism. Mm-hmm. And now the color of symbolism. It's not the position. It's the color of the individual that holds the position. That's good enough for us. Not knowing that all blacks in the country are not the same. They don't have the same experiences. I often tell people when they describe what they experience in the South in some areas, I say, I never experienced that.
Yeah.
So how can I relate to it?
Oh, I can relate to discrimination. I can just relate to discrimination from black students and white students. When I came to this country with an Australian accent, I was a minority of one. And not having parental support or teacher support or guidance support made it even worse. I was a person of one. I was my own island. They say no man is an island. Well, as a kid, I actually was. I couldn't go anywhere for help. You know, it's a survival story. That's why I'm fearless now. So it's kind of baptism by fire. And I wouldn't wish for, you know, my childhood on anybody. Although there were some good points. I did get some decent travel in. But the thing is, when people say, well, you're a white guy, you don't know about discrimination. I got news for you. I know about discrimination more than most people simply because most people who are discriminated in a racial group have other people of that racial group. I had nobody. There wasn't a single Canadian, Australian, you know, British Commonwealth person anywhere within my circle, my sphere, my anything. There wasn't a single one. At least in Australia, we had British kids, we had Indian kids, we had Japanese kids, New Zealand kids, we had Indonesian, Samoan, we had I don't think we had Aboriginal. That's probably the one folks we didn't have. We had Christians, we had Jews, we had Hindus, we had Buddhists, we had everybody. Everybody was a minority. In my
Yeah, but this whole idea.
I come to the United States, and I was the minority. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this whole idea about racism is pertaining to a certain color. Is a bunch of hogwash. It's just not true. Racism is the act. This whole idea that blacks, then they want to see when you listen to these people talk, they'll start with a situation within a room, one room. Then they want to project that out into the world. Then they want to project it back into time. You know, they're the best time travelers that you ever want to see, except for one thing. They always go backwards. They go backwards. They never go forward.
Yeah. Well, what's it going to take, you know, speaking of black Americans, to wake up and stop accepting what fellow black Americans and white American liberals are giving? Why do black Americans
want to live in the
world?
Well, here's where the other element.
What's that?
Here's where the other element comes into play. The media.
Okay.
The media always puts the camera on the faces and also the microphones to the mouths of those who always complain. But you never hear about those young people, young blacks, that's doing successful things, that's working hard, keeping their nose to the grinding wheel, that takes the hard subjects. They don't run from them. They take the hard subjects in school. They are not looking for the 310-point giveaway before you even sit down to take the test and deduct 140 points from the Asian and don't go either way with the white. They just want to put emphasis on quote unquote the sufferers, like the deal up there in what is this, Minnesota, I guess it is, Michigan, where they're rioting over the death of a fella.
Yeah,
here we go again.
It's interesting too that the major criminals, the subway shooter in New York was black. The parade massacre person was black. We actually have a black crime wave right now. The killings in Chicago are black. You know, it's really a sad situation. And not black immigrants. We're talking black American multi generational families here. So it's not the fact that they're black, it's the fact that they're American black, as opposed, I mean, we don't see Nigerian immigrants or Ghana immigrants or Kenyan or Ugandan or any other black immigrants coming to this country doing what black Americans are doing to each other. So it's not the black, it's not the color. It's the culture.
You don't hear about the white church that was shot up by the black men either.
Oh, I don't know about that one. Yeah, you're right. I don't hear about it. But so it'd be interesting. Yeah, it'd be really interesting. Well, this is where you could actually do a huge service. Now, this show is going to be really big one day, hopefully sooner than later. But Action Radio is going to be huge. And I think you could do a huge service by bringing forth black entrepreneurs. You know, I want to get Maj Touré on the show. I still have to write his producer. He'd be a perfect person. I think you guys would have a great discussion, as I know I would have him as well, because he's smart. He knows his constitution. But we need to start getting people. We need to start getting more black voices of young entrepreneurs, of young political leaders, or even older ones, you know, people that defy the stereotype. You know, if all you listen to is Al Sharpton and who else is complaining these days? Joy, or what's her name, Reed? You know, if that's the extent of your experience with black people in media, then you're missing a whole lot. You know, there's a whole lot of people that we need to hear from. We need to give these people a voice, just like I want to get just Chief Dan Skyhorse back, because we don't have American Indian voice on this show, and I miss it, because it's a perspective we need to get. I'd like to get Wendy back, on a Christian perspective. I mean, there was a time, actually, when Wendy's Christianity, you know, unless you're Christian, you're going to hell, and Dan Skyhorse, you know, American Indian philosophy, they kind of clashed a little. It was really funny to have them back to back. I had to be kind of careful. But it's just, but the extent of belief, and I saw value in both, huge value. But we need voices of black Americans that defy the stereotype. And if you can get black immigrants on, you know, and talk about these things.
Yeah,
I didn't come to this country to live on welfare in a public housing project with a substandard public school for my kids, you know, and a corrupt black government just because they look like me. I mean, that's the kind of thing we need to hear.
Well, you know, when you're in business, you know, I was a structure steel erected
right.
Multi-story buildings and bridges across rivers and highways and so on. But there's a lot of blacks. I know of a guy that's contemplating on doing aerial refueling, so that when FedEx leave New York, they don't have to stop in the Midwest on the ground and go through the ground traffic pattern. They can refuel in the air. So it's a lot of black businesses blacks that's getting into businesses that is never mentioned or talked about. And I think a lot of reason because of the news. The news is more oriented for liberal and leftist thought, and individuals that get into those positions, they want lower taxes. They want a change in the education system because apparently they have to hire these people that's coming out of these government schools, and they are disappointed in the products that they're having to try to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pity we can't get Candace Owens on the show because, well, first, she's really popular, but she'd be the perfect person to lead a national school choice 100% voucher movement, you know, especially among black voters. You know,
she's ostracized by blacks themselves. Another one is Star Parker, ostracized by blacks, even to the point where if she's speaking in a school, a black student body, they turn their back to her. Now, see, those young people had to be taught that. They would have to have been taught that about from older blacks that apparently they just got a grudge.
Yeah. Yeah, we're almost out of time here. I've got about 10 seconds left. But Star Parker, I used to listen to her when I was in San Francisco because she was down in L.A. I'd love to get her on the show. So there's so many people I want to get on the show. As this show grows and I'm convinced we're going to go through a quantum leap here fairly soon. A lot of things are going to happen. Unfortunately, I can't tell you, but I can tell you about the Australian Bill of Rights. That's going to be one of them. That'll be out next week. And so there's some major events happening here that this show not only is not going away, sorry, liberals, but it's going to have multi-million listeners worldwide as we help the rest of the world do what we're doing here to help our own country use citizen legislation to put forward the laws that we consent to be governed by. Grand experiment, it's never been done. It's going to be a revolution, and I'm firmly convinced it's going to work. Otherwise, I wouldn't do this every day. On that note, Pianki, thank you for another excellent week. Let's do it again Monday, And you have a good weekend, sir. Oh, he's dropped already. So I'll just sign off here. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. We're on Monday, 6 o'clock in the morning, Central, 7 Eastern, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific. And our legislative website, the one you really want to look at over the weekend, is writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. And I will see you next week. Actually, I won't see you. It's radio.